And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello from the BEAU T-Full Studios of Freedom is in the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, we're going to do one of my favorite subjects. Here we go. Carbon nanotubes, okay? We're going to find out, you know, a little something. Donna hooked us up with a young man. He's named the 30 top 30, okay, of what? Well, MIT has got a list of people. Forbes has got a list of people. He's one of them people. Now, we're going to get his name right, hopefully. Vivek Nair is a budding entrepreneur and inventor behind Damascus Fortune Technology. So you go to DamascusFortune.com. Now, he's listed in Forbes 30 under 30 energy category and also received the India MIT Technology Review Award Material Science category for his invention, and he has an invention. We're going to talk about the invention. All right. Go ahead and pronounce your name for us. Vivek Nair, am I saying that right?
Yes. It's Vivek Nair.
Vivek Nair. Okay, yeah. Thank you. This is, I don't know if you know or Donna said anything. I grow carbon nanotubes in my barn. See, I've been doing this for a year. What I knew is that, that's a long story, but bottom line is if I could use a carbon nanotube grown on a nickel iron cobalt catalyst of a kiln post that's used for firing pottery and so on, then I put it in a tube furnace over a inert gas field of argon and or helium. Probably helium works better, it seems. Mm-hmm. And then I take acetylene, C2H2, and run it over it. And at 735 to 800 degrees Celsius, it separates the bond and deposits the carbon that I make. And then I plate it with nickel, and I start high-density energy nickel-iron battery. Sound familiar?
Interesting. Very interesting.
So the thing is that we've been playing with this, you know, for a year. And the reason is because carbon nanotube is a technology that I get the feeling that they want, oh, it's a DARPA.MIL university and you're not allowed and we're going to do it and you don't get it and have a nice day. And I've been through this before. I'm 52. Mm-hmm. That's how they do the space race, a lot of different technologies and everything. Taxpayers pay for all this research and everything we don't get. And I'm going, hell no, they're not going to do it this time. Now, what you're doing, and you came to prominence, is that there's carbon emissions. Oh, global warming, we're all going to die. And somebody's emitting some carbon. Well, we might as well take that carbon and make some carbon goodies out of it. So that's what you'd all of a sudden they go, ooh, Vivek, you so smart. Well, tell us how smart you are and what you came up with and why it is yours. Tell me everything.
Okay, first of all, I don't consider myself smart. Okay, I just have an open idea. What I thought was, as you said, right, you have a tube furnace, you run at 750, 800 degrees Celsius, and then you said you have an inert gas, like helium. Helium works better for you, and then you have a catalyst, and you pass C2H2, which is essentially a hydrocarbon, right? So you go to any industry in the world, say take petrochemical, or take thermal power plant, or go to rice industry, or go to a coke industry, or go to somewhere where they burn tires. What you get is essentially the same kind of hydrocarbon, you know, let it be methane or it can be ethylene or any kind of simple hydrocarbon, you have the high temperature there in the furnace. And by default, you have an inerte atmosphere there. So all you need to do is have a catalyst, you know, floating in the air. So what will happen is all the emission that comes out could essentially or naturally get converted into carbon nanotubes. So that's what I did during my bachelor's. So this is what I did when I was doing my bachelor's. So I was crazy doing projects, a lot of projects.
And where were you going to school? Where were you going to school when you did this? In India or at MIT? Where did this happen?
No, it was in India. It's a very small local college in Tamil Nadu in India.
So MIT just wanted to get their brand on you.
No. So after this, I started my, you know, I thought, why not develop it as a, it is a huge, you know, company and all. So because, you know, I don't like things just ending up in just research papers and patents just wasting public money. So I thought this should be, have a real commercial potential. So that's why I started a company. And then when I presented in different avenues, so that's how MIT came to know about me and they put me in the TR-35 list. So that's a different story. So essentially what I came to know that this technology can be applied to any kind of industries, wherever you have hydrocarbon or carbon monoxide, typically. And all you need to do is you need to have a reactor separate attached to this, and then pass your emissions, industrial emissions through our reactor where the process is very much controlled and the environment is suitable enough to produce carbon nanotubes.
Okay, now let's go ahead and start right there.
Yeah.
As you're bringing out some kind of, you know, they're burning tires is a really good example. Anything that produces a lot of carbon, okay, which is just about anything, okay? So, and that's one thing that really got me angry is that I could see there was all these different, you know, like a carbon nanotube rhino hide bulletproof vest that we got, blah, 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 blah. And all they're doing is sprinkling some nanotubes into the resin or whatever and saying they got nanotubes. It may increase the, you know, ballistic capabilities of it. But, you know, the point was is that they were selling the term nanotube and not so much. Now I go, you got as much nanotubes as you say, hell, I'll pay $1,000 for your vest, burn off everything, get nanotubes and say, thank you, I made a deal. I mean, you know, I mean, seriously, what is it you're really doing? And it was just all this, you know, getting grant money, buzzword, you know, do it. And what you've done is you've created two buzzwords, carbon emissions, pollution, and freaking carbon nanotubes, and you put them together, you're a hero, okay? So I understand, I have complete understanding, but the first thing, before we finish this segment, we got the whole hour, we're going to have some fun with this. I am semi-familiar with what you're talking about and what you're doing, but please explain really quickly to the audience why making carbon nanotubes from anything. You know, the fact that you're doing it from emissions, you know, is better than not. But the fact that you're making carbon nanotubes is important. Why? What do I care? What do I want carbon nanotubes for? What's it going to do for me?
Thanks for asking that question, because I really wanted to tell about that. Okay, let me take you to the history of materials, okay? You might know that Carnegie, you know, Andrew Carnegie, who started the steel revolution in US, right? Before that, what you used was iron, typically for construction of bridges, rails, everything, right? And then he suddenly says, steel is better. Steel is much better. It is more durable. And why not I just start using steel? And hence, it starts the U.S. steel, which starts as Carnegie steel, and then it converts into U.S. steel. So what he does was he uses all this scrap iron, and all the iron gets converted into steel. So what you essentially do is you have made a stronger material, right? Now, what is happening is you're taking plastics, you know, different kind of plastics, polymers are used everywhere in the world.
Okay, now wait a minute. The one we're going to be hitting break in about 40 seconds, so I don't want you to get too deep. But the other thing is, is steel, what makes iron into steel is what?
It's a strength. So what you're doing is you're going ahead in terms of materials.
Yeah,
so,
with carbon.
You know, steel replaced iron. So what I meant to say is that, and plastic and polymers are replacing steel. So why not carbon nanotubes or carbon nanotubes, or materials made out of carbon nanotubes, replace those polymers.
That's the kind of idea. I saw this coming when they first did an article on buckyballs and carbon nanotubes and popular science in 1991. You know, I'm not waiting. It's 20-something years. You had your chance. I'm not waiting anymore. I want to talk to somebody that's actually good. Yo, Vivek Nair from India. You know, seriously, we got to go to India, you know, and what made steel? It's, you know, carbonizing iron, it gets stronger.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the years has already happened.
Okay. Help me, Vivek?
Yeah.
Which one do you want me to say?
Vivek.
Okay. Now, when we come back, this is the one thing, we got plenty of time, we got three more segments, but I do want to make that, the point that I was trying to make is that what makes steel is the presence of carbon. I mean, it's getting to the point where it's just like, you know, screw the iron, or we'll have as much carbon as we do, you know, iron now, and it'll be reversed, and then what, you know? So it's let's go ahead and get on the benefits of the finish on the benefits of transitioning into carbon and nanotubes and the kind of things that it does and why and all that.
Sure. So what essentially happened was, you know, addition of carbon made steel. That's okay. That's a very simple example. But, you know, people have proved, and, you know, 1% addition of carbon nanotube makes your polymer conductive. And, 3% addition into rubber makes it twice stronger. So these are all proven data. So why don't you see, as you said, like you have been hearing it from 1990s, you're not been seeing products out there, right? That's one of the main reasons is the cost. You know, people, the companies do sell it at high price. Okay, the cheapest that you can ever get is like $200 per kilogram in China and all. So that is the cheapest you can get. So, and
that's pretty damn cheap. When I first started looking, it was like I get some nanotube samples for as much as $160 a gram. I'm going, are you freaking?
That has changed. I think you need to update the figure. So you can get it $200 per kilogram now. Multi-wall nanotubes.
Okay, I don't want
95% pure.
Okay, I don't want to say everything on the air because off air. I want to get it during the show. So this is, you know, like bonus stuff. So I don't want you to just say it now and then you don't say it later.
Yeah.
Okay, but so this is where we're going on this. I do have, my biggest reason for are you at a computer?
Yes.
Okay. In the next break, what we'll do is I'll have you go to Freedom's Phoenix and show you our magazine that we do. And we have a magazine cover that shows my lab. And it's really simple. I mean, it's a, $2,500 tube furnace I got from China, De La, whatever it takes. And I could understand it was the chemical or carbon vapor deposition method that I'm using, and it was all about the catalyst. And are you, the catalyst, are you able to talk about the different kinds of catalysts and the effects it has and the importance of that part?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Well, let's, I will get into that, but I want to go ahead. We're going to start here in a few seconds, is really focus on why nanotubes? What do I give a crap? You know, so let's go ahead and we'll get to that. Here we go.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Don't need them. Don't need them. If you got carbon nanotubed, shielded, covered, material made light as a feather vehicles and whatever. You know, that's why I want to have Vivek Nair help me out from Damascus Fortune. And it's The reason we want, I know the transition, you know, we had iron, you add a little carbon, it gets to, it's steel. You add a little bit more carbon, and pretty soon you're just going to have a couple of iron atoms, and it's a big, giant carbon nanotube structure of whatever, all right? So this is, and you know, it's like we move from, you know, metals to different kinds of composites and plastics and carbon fiber. You know, the transition's coming. I mean, I raised my children with the understanding that it was going to be materials. Both my sons work at Honeywell Aerospace. Why? Because I kept putting, it's materials. You need to know how to machine, you know how to make it, you need to know how to use it. This is what the future is, materials, guarantee it. I remember in the movie The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman, what does it say? A guy goes over, he brings him over in a party, says, hey, I got one word for you. All right, here it is. You ready? I got one word for you. Plastics. And from that time on, it just went, you know, stupid. And they kept, because I remember what plastics was. It's made of plastic? What the heck? Now it's like, hey, man, it's made of uber-duber some kind of plastic. Well, it's going to evolve into carbon. Now, I want to have Vivek explain to us why that's important. What is so great about carbon, carbon nanotubes, graphene, all these other different products that we have from freaking carbon, which is everywhere. So go ahead and explain to people what the future looks like, why it's so important, what the traits are of this material, and then we'll get into how you're making it.
So carbon nanotubes are like very strong. They're stronger than steel by its individual filaments, like stronger than steel. So it's like 400 times stronger than steel. Conductivity is as good as copper, and thermal conductivity is as good as diamond. So that's the simplest form I can say. So it can be used for a variety of materials. All that you see today, say the wood, plastic, in future might be in some extent metals, could also be replaced with carbon-based materials. All that you see now can be literally be shifted from carbon, from the usually used materials to carbon nanotube-based. And the best part is it would be lightweight. It would be more durable, more stronger. And you would have just seen a trend, you know, people started using carbon fiber to make sports goods, shoes, the sports vehicle, even Boeing 787 is made of carbon fiber. So carbon fiber is like, you know, 10 times less stronger than carbon nanotube. So imagine the trend. So that's the trend that is coming up. So slowly and steadily, everything would be, you know, made out of carbon nanotubes.
Now, let me go ahead and ask you, we were talking about this off air for a moment, and you said, I was year and a half ago, and I'm looking, I need some samples of I want to whatever. And I start checking on the, because I just wanted to go get the nanotubes to use in my experiments for the nickel iron battery. And I go, all right, let's get some. Oh, yeah, that's $160 a gram. And you're saying now, oh, it's still expensive. Oh, my goodness, it's a bunch. You can get it from China now, and it costs you how much?
It's just like $200 a kilogram.
Oh, big difference. Heck, I mean, I need to make them anymore. But that was kind of the point. I was like, look, it's carbon, man. I can just make them myself. And then there's a new process using electricity in an electrolyte that you can do to purify and change. So that's the next stage that I'm on now. Because I, a lot of it, I don't know what I got. You know, I got an electron microscope that I, find. You know, it's a long story. But I'm going, when you are at university and you're making your nanotubes, how did you know you were making nanotubes? You use a spectrometer or some kind of thing? I mean, what are you doing? How do you know?
Okay, the reason why I started doing this is the same reason why you started doing that. Okay, I needed carbon nanotubes for making a sensor, okay? And I couldn't afford to buy at that time because when I saw the price, it was the same, $400 a gram. So I thought I should, I asked for funds and everything. I never got any funds, so I thought I should make it by myself. And the university even didn't allow me to make it because I was an undergrad at that time, so... they didn't allow to use any of the equipment, so I couldn't afford it. The best option was to try and see in a nearby rice mill whether I could use the rice mill furnace to produce carbon nanotubes. So I just had a small catalyst coated on a cement-based substrate and then exposed it. And after exposing, I got some black color. I never knew it could be carbon nanotube. I thought it could be some form of carbon. So luckily, I got access to scanning electron microscope and transmission electron microscopy. But I could do a quick testing with the help of some of the friends. So, when they analyzed, they said there is some tubular formation that they detected. So, hooray. So I thought, okay, yeah, I got carbon nanotubes. Awesome. So, and from there I started, you know, developing from a substrate based catalyst motor to something that can, you know, convert all the a large amount of emission into carbon nanotubes.
So okay, let's start, you know, go back to your catalyst. You said you just used it I didn't even think of that. You know, you use concrete as a substrate, right?
Yes, I used concrete substrate.
Okay, I used a ceramic kiln post, like when you fire pottery and stuff. Those work awesome. I mean, I didn't think of concrete, but the kiln post, you know, you might want to play with. But the thing is that the catalyst that you used was what?
It's a ferrous-based catalyst, actually. Yeah, magnetic.
Okay. Okay, but it's bait. I mean, is it a secret, or are you going to give me a little bit of, what it was?
It was basically an oxide of ferrous.
Of iron.
It's supposed to be it's magnetic, and that's one of the main key features of my IP, which tends to produce carbon nanotube even at lower temperatures.
And what kind of temperatures are you talking about? I'm at like 735 degrees Celsius. It starts...
I'm talking about 200 degrees Celsius, 180, 200 degrees Celsius.
What? Okay. Yes. So 200 degrees Celsius, and if you have it magnetic, that changes everything.
Yes. So
all your secrets are out. Yay! We don't believe in IP here. Okay. All right.
That's what you get in rice mill. That's what you get in a rice mill. Yeah.
Wow, man, 200 degrees Celsius in a rice mill.
That's what a rice mill furnace operates at, yeah.
Wow, well, what do they use the mill? Are they cooking the rice, or what are they doing?
No, they burn the husk.
Oh, okay, so it's a power station.
It's a normal rice mill where they burn all the husk and, de-husking and stuff like that happens. So we got an access to that rice mill where we enter through the manhole in the rice mill and then... You know, I just tied the concrete over which I pasted my catalyst and then tied to a big long rod and then inserted it. That's how I started the experiment.
Oh, my goodness. That's so ingenious. All right. So you're at a lower temperature. They're just burning off the husk, you know, the wheat husk, the barley husk, the rice husk, or whatever husk. They're just burning it off, creating all this carbon. And you go, hey, can I have some of your carbon? They go, take all the carbon you want. I don't give a crap. So you go and you put it in there, and you had your ferrous, it's an iron magnetic. And I didn't even think of that. So now we're adding magnetism to it a little bit to change that. I am so going to rip you off. Okay, so this is, but how do you make it magnet? All right, damn it. See, we're going to do some bonus stuff during the commercials. You guys, you know that on the video, you can go and get, and we'll probably include it on the audio too. He and I are going to go keep talking, and we'll try and sum it up when we come back on the broadcast. But you need to go to Freedoms with an F, freedomsphoenix.com. After the show, we'll get the archive up in a few hours after we finish with Chad on Endless Food Systems. You know, he's going to be in for a couple hours. We're making progress on the Aquadome. Okay. I am so going to tell everybody your secrets, okay? But this is... You can see we're kind of the same mind halfway around the world, and I'm thinking the same thing. I'm going, man, this cannot be that hard, and they're trying to make it hard. In fact, they don't want this to become common technology. It threatens everything. I mean, from everything, everything. And that's how I explain it to people. I go, when you scan just sit down in your chair and look around, everything. Every housing, every case, every, hell, even the displays, the bendable, this, that, strong, never corrode, doesn't go bad, kind of everything will be made of carbon. As much as you look and you see all the plastics that are around you, when I was born, there wasn't that much plastic. It was all glass. And it went from glass and metal and steel to plastic. And now it's going to go from plastic to a carbon resin nanotube, whatever the hell. And it's only going to be limited by our imagination. But one of the traits of it is it's very, very conductive. And that's how I know when I've gotten where I... Because what happens is when I get the nanotubes or the carbon, I'm still, hoping. But when I get the nanotubes growing on my substrate, that makes it conductive so I can plate it with any metal. So I'm plating it with nickel to make the core of my battery. So what it does is it gives me enormous surface area, and it charges and discharges really fast. And I'm going, wow, but I made a mistake and I contaminated it in electroplating in the first wave of them with copper because I had the copper leads got into the nickel solution. And so I'm going, ah, and it worked really good. And then it started to oxidize the copper, see the green on it, and it started losing its ability. And I'm going, but it had some other traits, you know, and I'm going, okay, so I'm doing what's called, you know, original discovery. I don't want to research too much because this is what I found out. There's a lot of, you know, you can even buy PDF research on, you know, all kinds of different stuff on scientists and $30, I'll tell you about it. And I go and I start reading a lot of this stuff and they're all conflicting. It's like they're seeding the information out there so that you can't succeed. And I'm going, you know, screw them. This is, and they're just making it up or they got a grant to do it and they don't really understand what's going on. You're doing from the foundation base, just, I got a string into a furnace, kind of, I'll figure it out. And that is what I find amazing and exactly what I try to emphasize. There are people out there that just do it. And then you get recognized. And I want to know at what point when we come back, you got all of a sudden everyone, ooh, we're going to give you a shiny badge and ooh, we love you long time and ooh, and then find out how much if they've helped you or are they getting in your way. You see my point?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, this is – so let's go ahead and we'll pick it up where you had your we'll go ahead and sum up with your experiment and how you started doing it. And then you went to check it and you found out you were making nanotubes. And then what you had to alter or change or tweak a little bit to increase the production of the nanotubes. And then, you know, you see this as, hey, man, I just wanted to make nanotubes. But also where they look at it, oh, you're taking all of this and aren't we great and wonderful? You're converting our pollution into a product. So yeah. That's how they're seeing it. You know, it's PR, you know. Yes. But I want to see what's being done and what your plans are and how you're going to do that. All right, here we go. Yes.
Okay.
That's FEP, so, yeah. .cc.
No, you say it on air. Here we go.
Creative Commons.
Okay, here we go.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
DamascusFortune.com, DamascusFortune.com, Vivek Nair, he goes, hey man, nanotube, I know how to do this. We got a rice milling factory, you know, they kind of need to get the husk and burn it and make a bunch of carbon, and it goes in the air, and ooh, bad carbon, and we can take that car. You don't mind if I use your furnace for you, do you? And they go, yeah, fine. He takes concrete, he coats it with a, you know, iron magnetic kind of, you know, whatever catalyst, he dips it in there at under 200 degrees Celsius, which is nothing, and he goes down there, and all of a sudden he pulls it out. I got a bunch of nanotubes. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. I take it over to have some guys test. We do the electron microscope thing. I got nanotubes. Two things happen. One, you make nanotubes. All right? It's cheap. It's just an exhaust. And all of a sudden, these factories are going, we green. We're clean in the air. We're going to make, you know, in matter of fact, we can make some money. We can get some product here from our emissions that we were just throwing in the air, and everybody's complaining, coughing up, you know, black stuff anyway. So, you know what? Vivek is our new best friend, MIT, top 30, under 30. Kind of, we're going to do it. Where do we go from here? Help me out, man.
Yeah. That's what we did. And as you know, we are all student-based startup, and it's not like U.S. culture in India where you get easily angel-funded or seed-funded. So there was no funding for us. The only source of funding was going for competitions and getting some prize money. So that's how I finished my research. So the competitions that we won, you know, every time we win some competitions, that aids our research. So that's how from there we started our lean startup, and we thought we should continue this, pursue this further. And then we got into different industry, like we tested it in thermal power plants. Currently, we thought, okay, this coating business would not do because coating will only give you very less amount of CNTs and you will not be able to convert.
What, I couldn't understand you. What will not do?
The coating on a substrate and then growing it over the substrate won't give you large quantities of CNTs. and you'll not be able to convert large quantities of the emissions. So for doing that, your catalyst has to be independent of the substrate. So
you're doing it in the air.
Yes. So the catalyst is saturated in the air, in the furnace, within the furnace. So
you're atomizing it how? You're spraying it in pneumatically, or is it just...
It's
like a fuel injector?
Floating catalyst.
I'm sorry?
It's called a floating catalyst.
Well, I mean, how are you injecting it? Are you using it like a fuel injector in a car or something? You're spraying it in as in the certain part of the heat or what?
Yeah, it's mixed with water or ethanol. And then when you vaporize it at, around 150 above temperature, it gets vaporized like camphor. And the catalyst, stays super saturated within the furnace zone. So that's how we make it. There are many catalysts like this. One similar is nicolozine, cobaltozine, ferrozine kind of material.
Okay, so now when you do the catalyst, you're spraying it into the flue or something, right? I mean, as you're burning this, there's a certain point, temperature will rapidly reduce as it goes up the smokestack or something. So you got to, and if you put it, too far and you're shooting this liquid in, you're going to reduce the temperature a great deal. So you're probably getting it down a little bit closer to the source of the heat, and you're putting this in there, you're vaporizing whatever, and the carbon is just, immediately attaching to whatever this catalyst is to create the nanotube, and then you got this black powder rising up and you're collecting that. How?
So what we do is now the emissions that are coming out, we have a duct, we attach a separate pipeline, and now this emission, instead of going into the air, will go into a separate furnace of ours. So in that furnace we have the catalyst which is injected, and now the gas doesn't flow up, it flows down. So when the gas reacts with the CNTs, The design of the furnace is such a way, it's like a cyclone separator design. So only the leftover gas goes out while the solid matter falls down.
Okay, now when you say the solid metal, which includes, the nanotubes.
Solid matter includes carbon nanotubes and the catalyst. Yeah.
So you're just getting in a separate, as you redirect the exhaust, you're getting a lot of the, other gases, stuff you don't want, that's going up the flue and that's their problem, whatever. You're looking for the carbon nanotubes. And it's just precipitating in the air. It's just dropping.
At the bottom, yeah.
Okay, so it's bottom, dropping. You got like a bucket of black powder, right?
Yes, at the bottom we get, it's a wet carbon nanotube.
So this,
when the carbon nanotubes are formed, it's semi-wet, yeah.
So this method and this furnace, and this, you can tweak it depending on what the exhaust is of wherever, so that's going to be kind of the dial
that's
you got to turn.
Yeah.
But it's any exhaust of any industry of any waste that has carbon. You can pretty much, you might have some problems with some over the other and you're creating some extra. Oh, my goodness, I didn't know I got that. But, you're able to just have a carbon nanotube factory in another factory with their waste product that now you got a bunch of, looky what I got.
Exactly. Yeah, that's
what I get. Oh, you're my new best friend. Okay. So now that you're creating these, what form? Now, I've seen carbon nanotube. The one I'm trying to get, the single wall nanotube that they get into like a black velvet to where I can start to pull one off and it kind of comes out as a thread. Mm-hmm. That is my ultimate goal. Now,
that's cool. That's the best thing. That's also my ultimate goal. But what we do is currently is multi wall nanotubes. And it for you, it grows on a substrate and it grows like a forest. And hence, once you pull it from one end, it can grow as a thread. For me, it's not grown on a substrate. So it's like a powder, so what you meant to say is spinning, you pull it from one end and you try to spin a thread out of it. That's the ultimate. If you can do that, that's the best. But we are not able to currently, there are a lot of R&D to be done to reach that stage, but we just produce simple multi-walled nanotubes at this stage.
Okay, and now multi-wall has, its own traits. I mean, it's a kind of almost a byproduct of doing the single-wall nanotubes, but it's still, it's enormous potential to do what? Now you got your black powder, and you took that to where? How did you get it analyzed? Is there, where were you getting your reading? Hey, man, I got a couple of nanotubes here, or I'm increasing or decreasing my nanotubes, my black powder here. How do you test that?
Yeah, very simple. We have our collaborations with, we pay money and get uh, the samples analyzed at different universities. So we have some collaborations here in JNTU in Hyderabad. We get it analyzed from some private labs. So, you know, usually it's very difficult to get it analyzed. In the earlier days, it was like a hell analyzing samples. But now, after a few contacts and, you know, friendly relations here and there, we get it analyzed easily.
In our search, you know, for access to an electron microscope, we found a hacker space here, just, you know, a bunch of guys doing a bunch of stuff. This one 28-year-old girl that worked as a subcontractor for Jet Propulsion Laboratory here in the East Valley built her own electron microscope.
Wow.
She learned how to do milling with their computer-aided mill and built it. And she went to Berlin and gave a talk on it. But I, you know, awesome. It's just, but then she's very kind of clandestine. They're like, damn it, man. You know, the people don't want me to talk to, you know, people. You know, so that's another thing. You know, are you getting full support, you know, from industry and government and everything going, yay? Or is somebody going, wait, time out, man. You're like, you shouldn't do this. I mean, you know, what kind of support are you getting?
Okay, no support, to be fact. No support. We didn't get any kind of support from government, even though they knew about this. It's all just the waste fame. Fame is waste. So I don't understand why all this fame, but there's no support. Industries don't like to change their processes. Yeah, they do like converting emissions, but you know, it's like there was a lot of industries who approached me when I got into all the Forbes list and stuff like that. But we were too early to, you know, go ahead and do something. Industries never consider this as an emission. So once you start discussing with them that, okay, you're going to make nanotubes out of it, it's not a pollution, it's a resource for them. So then they start negotiating with you for doing it.
Okay, when we come back from the break, what I want to discuss is, you know, is there a market for what you're doing right now? I mean, still at, you know, $200 a kilogram, you know, is better than, you know, it's carbon. I mean, you know, I get a $200 briquette of charcoal. I mean, that's a pretty good price for charcoal, you know? It's not that far off. Freedom Summit 2014, February, in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. Since 2001, the Freedom Summit has annually featured many rising stars of the Liberty Movement before they were proven right. The 2014 Freedom Summit has been crafted to provide a glimpse of the future and how best to position your family as we transition away from authoritarianism to a voluntarist society. Freedom Summit 2014's partial speaker list includes anti-police state columnist Will Grigg and anarchist Larkin Rose. They are Saturday night's dinner double feature. Other Freedom Summit presenters include co-host of Ron Paul's America and New York Times bestselling author Charles Goyette. Independent Institute's Anthony Gregory. Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope. International columnist Paul Rosenberg. Criminal defense attorney Mark J. Victor and 3D gun printer Cody Wilson. And that's just half the list. See the full list at freedomsummit.com. The Freedom Summit, where the great minds of the modern freedom movement have been coming together since 2001. Okay. When we come back, are there markets for your product? Are people trying to replicate it, take it? Do you have patents? You know, are you worried about somebody repeating it, or you don't care and go in peace and I'm going to do my thing? I mean, what's the future for your efforts?
Okay. So we have two kind of customers, like one, the industries who wants to convert their emissions into carbon nanotubes, and the others are the one who want to buy carbon nanotubes. Okay. About market. Okay, for carbon nanotubes, the cost, as I said before, is $200 per kilogram, but still it's too costly for any real-time application. So for a tire industry, whom we are talking to, for them to literally add this carbon nanotube into their tires to increase the strength and make it economically viable, the cost should be less than $50 per kilogram. Okay, so there is no other company in the world which can do that, because there involves a lot of hydrocarbons. You need to buy and use it to make carbon nanotubes for other companies. For us, we are the only company. It's like we will be stationed on any existing industry, so our capital expenditure is minimum. For us, the emission is our raw material, apart from the catalyst. And our catalyst is renewable. So we can produce at a very low cost, so like no one else. So that's where our IP lies in. And we have patents filed. And that's the key thing. So
okay, now the market, though, is they're going, okay, wow, you're making these multi-wall carbon nanotubes, and I want a bunch of them because I'm going to go make my what? And then you find out that, you know, that industry and what they're making is going to need to be tweaked a little bit, and they need you to change your catalyst and your cooking time and your furnace because I need a little longer making whatever the hell. So you know, this I want to talk about also your customers and they're doing, you know, and what they would use it for and how they would use it and what volume they're going to be in the future of this industry, because I get it. You could be, you know, Carnegie Mellon, man. You're JP whatever the hell. You know, I get it. You know, this is the beginning. I see, you're what I've been waiting for. I've been screaming this stuff for years, you know, to the point that I just started doing it myself. So it wasn't so much that I thought I was going to be the guy doing it. I didn't care. That's not the point. I just want my Jetson car, and this is what's going to help me get it. I mean, it's that simple, seriously. Okay.
Yes.
I'm more like this quantum reality law of attraction, just take a step, start doing it, it'll happen guy. Okay.
Yes.
So it wasn't so much I was worried that I was going to do it, it's that it needed to be done. All right. Yes. Here we go. We can start with that and then you can go with it with your customers.
Yes.
Here we go.
Watch the LRN Studio Cam and chat with other listeners anytime at cam.lrn.fm. That's cam.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Yeah, break free! How are we going to do that? Well, I'm not getting my Jetson car until I get the nanotube thing taken care of. I mean, it's all about strength and weight and durability and conductivity and permeability and blah, 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 all these abilities. And carbon nanotubes, here we freaking go. And what were we waiting for? We're waiting for somebody to start producing them, mass producing. Oh my goodness, we might just use carbon waste. You know, they're going, oh, what's the two customers for this kind of technology? The guys that are making the waste, oh my goodness, carbon emissions are all going to die. And they go, okay, well, we're taking and turning it into a product that we're selling it to the people. They go, oh my goodness, I need some of your nanotubes, supply me. And then all of a sudden, you know, just in the last year, it's gone from $160 a gram to about just over that for a kilogram. Well, you know, it's still too expensive. So we have someone here from India, Vivek Nair, that's, you know, set as the 30 under 30 of the top scientists of the, we got in heck what he said from MIT. And they're said, oh, he's so smart. Now he starts getting some attention. Now he starts doing a little bit of venture capital. Now he's sitting there great and we can do and fix and we got. So now I want to ask, I go, okay, so explain to me who would be the consumer. They're going to come to you and they say, give me a bucket of whatever the heck it is that you're making. Who are these people and what do you think they're going to be doing with your carbon nanotubes?
Okay. In general, they are tire companies who make tires. Then there are companies like cement companies, composite industries. There are typically most of them, 80% of them are composite industries. There are some lithium-ion battery companies who wants to add it to the battery composites. So yeah, so these are the main companies.
Okay, now the company that you did is, these are, when you say tire companies, they want to eliminate carbon from their emission process, or they want to add the carbon nanotubes into the tires?
Add the carbon nanotube into the tires.
Yeah. So we have carbon nanotube tires. Now this is, you know, and that would, their estimation on how this would increase tire life is what? They're going, we'll have a tire that lasts a lifetime, or it's going to increase it double, or what's their claim?
The strength of the tires will be much better, and the durability and the lifelong. So it will be, you know, the durability will increase by almost twice. So that's the kind of thing they're looking at. But for them to be economically viable, the cost has to be, you know, below $50 a kilogram.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, it has to get down to what a kilogram? $50, you said?
Yes.
Okay, now this is, see, I don't think people really understand the opposition. You have everybody against you. You are going to compete with everybody that supplies raw material. I mean, I'm talking steel, iron, rubber, plastics. I mean, you are a threat to, let me think, everybody. So you're not going to get support other than they'll pat you on the back and you're a smart kid and go over there and play in the corner and here's your grant and award and go away and or you work for the military. Okay. So I'm going, okay, what is your goal? How are you? Is this you're going to go save the world, the planet? You want to be the next Carnegie Mellon? You're kind of, you know, the opportunity is boundless and we're going to, what's your goal? What would you use as your bar of success?
Okay, it's very simple. Okay, the industries, we do a pure business. Even though this is bought from pollution, we share the profit with the industry whose emissions we take. Okay, and so we have a producer and we have a customer who are ready to buy our lot, say like 100 metric tons a year and all. So there are people coming up. They want carbon nanotubes to be included in the price. They want the price less. So we are working in hand with, you know, companies like Coke, metallurgical coke industry, companies that burn tire pyrolysis to produce fuel, companies like thermal power plants. So we're working with them. So
how much protein does your dog food have?
18%? 20? Oh, no, hold on. I'm sorry. That's me. I was going to play your video, but it's playing the network. Okay, this is... I want to, in the last couple of minutes here, I want to give you an opportunity to talk to our audience about how they can help track you. What should they be looking for? Where's a few, how many years away when this big giant black tsunami tidal wave of nanotube is going to start, you know, overcoming their lives? You know, what kind of time frame are you looking at?
Typically, if things run perfectly well, and if you get support, I don't know, but yeah, it's tough to say that. Probably 10 years down the lane, I think most of the industries, ideally, if our technology spreads, I could see everywhere in every industry we have Damascus Fortune over there in every industry. And locations where you see pollution.
How much protein does your dog food have? 18%?
12%? I'm sorry. I was trying to pull up your video and play it at the same time, but it's got an advertisement I can't get off. So this is, you're looking in the future and you're seeing how it's going to, this technology is going to overwhelm us. Is, you know, is there a competition? Isn't there? I thought in early 90s that by, heck, within a few years, there's going to be, because they knew how to make carbon nanotubes. They're sitting there making them. How come they're not making them? Why are they not making them? What is the roadblock to this? You, a student at a university in India, is in a rice emissions husk burn, in fact, doing it, going, hey, I did it. And they're going, damn it. We knew this would leak out. We knew somebody would start making carbon. Oh, my God. Ernie's got it in his barn. Why is there such a wait for this? Who is against this? Who's not for it? What is the holdup?
I don't know who is against it, but yeah, we're doing our own way, but we don't have that kind of research funding that you get in US and all. I know a counterpart with me who came in the same Forbes list, people from US, they got funded like $33 million and all, and we being a company in India, probably we don't get that easily funded. I don't know a reason. I think if my company was a US-based company, things would have been different. I could have easily raised huge millions of dollars, and then I could have speeded up the entire thing. So far, we have raised no investment. Everything has been our own money, and we have been like a lean startup, you know, just doing our own way. And we don't take, most of our founders don't even take salary and all, so we do it. So far, we have been like struggling. Still, we are struggling. So
let me think. Think about this. You know, we have like a, you know, just starting a new Kickstarter funding page program thing for things like this on Freedom's Phoenix. Okay, now I'm going. Mm-hmm. Would we be better off to, you know, give you a little something, something over there, show me a little something, you know, and you start working with us, and we get a relationship with the people of America, mm-hmm. not the industry, not the control. You know what? Hey, you got a good idea. Here's a few million dollars. Now do what we say, and don't do what we say. See, my thing is that this technology is really, you've described it as not really that difficult. I mean, it has enormous, enormous benefits on so many levels, and that is one of the reasons why it's not being supported. I am of the opinion that carbon nanotube technology, they want to keep, they, them, those, whoever they are, want to keep it for themselves and the benefits they get, but it competes with too many interests. It competes with every material on the planet. Everything that's conductive, everything that's strong, everything that's durable, everything, and it lasts longer. Who wants to do time? Heck, I got Exide batteries, bought nickel iron battery manufacturing in the 70s and closed the plant because they want you to keep buying lead acid. I'm going, it's exactly that. So I'm going, this threatens every industry. You are not going to get the popular support of fill in the blank. But if you are independent, if you are by your, if you are in India, and those little, they go, hey man, you know, you share a little bit, kind of, we can kind of, you know, and send, and here we go. You never know. They just might buy, heck, you might be selling chunks of nanotube just for somebody to put it as a paperweight on their freaking desk. You know, so I understand what you're coming up against, and I want to help. I want to make sure that we maintain some kind of contact, because exactly what you're doing and the original discovery that you've made and the stuff that you is exactly what I'm trying to create, my itty-bitty little living space over here in my barn. But I've been waiting on you. Well, here you are, and I only had to go to India to find you, okay? Mm-hmm. So we're going to try and keep some help. We're out of time here, but go ahead and hold on. We'll do a little bit more here in the break. But I'm telling you, man, I want to help. I want to be part of whatever you, just to get your message out, and because it's, there's something else blocking it. Something else. I don't know what. Maybe with us helping each other, we can find out what it is. Because I think there's a market. You know there's a market. On two sides. Eliminating the emissions and the nanotubes themselves. I'll give out the webpage you want them to go to real quick. It's the DamascusFortune.com. We'll be right back.
What if the key...
Okay. Now we can go ahead and do a little bit bonus stuff here. Now, I just wanted to... No, go ahead and leave the video going for a little bit. This is... I want to maintain some contact with you because you have no idea how much effort I've put in just to give a kind of a an overview or a awareness of people to know how important this technology is, and it's going to explode all over the world and the U.S. just to get another 6 months or a year out of delay so that they can sell more of their whatever the hell, that we are all suffering because of this, and we cannot worry about collectives. We cannot go get permission from. Even your effort to patent and IP this stuff is just time wasted, in my opinion, but you do whatever you want. But the point is that this technology is going to overwhelm everybody, and whoever is there first, and the fact that you're doing it with carbon emissions, and that shuts up the global warming, fine, you want to get rid of them? Hell, I'll take your carbon right here in pink nanotubes. And they go, shit, we didn't want that. See my point?
Yes, yes, yes.
So are you running up against that, or how far off am I?
It's like, you know, there are technologies like carbon capture and storage where they get the carbon dioxide and then pump it under the sea and try to have a better oil recovery. But that's a huge waste of money. That's what I think. And you don't get profit out of it. That's why many industries don't use them, or they don't want to use them, because of highly capital expenditure. So technology like us would promote industries to do it, at least for the sake of getting more profits, you know, out of their waste. So I think this kind of technology should instead inspire and promote industries to come ahead, come forward, and adopt our technology. But it's a tough call, because you know I'm not a professor to get a grant easily from any government that I could get a grant and then start doing it. Nor am I in US that you have a startup kind of culture where VCs will easily fund you. So everything has to be hand to mouth kind of approach. So we use our bare minimum resources to do whatever is possible to get a minimum viable product, start selling it, and then that's why even after I'm having a lot of customers, clients, prototype, device, pilot plant, still I couldn't raise any investment.
Okay,
that's the problem.
Let's do a do you have access to a facility now? Is your rice Huckster guys, are they still letting you, make your whatever? I mean, do you have one of the furnaces on any of the industries?
Yes, 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 yes. We are working with two industries currently. One is in Gujarat, called Carbon Edge Industries Limited. And there's another industry called Fabritech in Hyderabad where they burn tires and, you know, they generate fuel and carbon black.
This is my point, skip to the end, is that you are actually producing multi-wall carbon nanotubes powder that I can buy in a baggie of whatever.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we're making it. Yeah. But at a small scale, yeah, obviously.
No, that's fine. That's fine. No, my point is that this is your fundraising opportunity. Because what I would like to do is put up on our shopping cart and so on, you know, we could make a little cube of carb something. I mean, what could we, I mean, I want something to put on my desk. I'd pay $50 for me to have something put on my desk that costs you whatever. I don't care. Okay. So this is a sphere, or a little pyramid, a triangle pressed into a something. Okay. You give me something. It could be even the powder inside a case. You know, the screw-on pyramid top or something. I mean, a little, you know, heck, a little glass vial. I don't care. Okay? So we need to think about this. We'll come up. I'm going to have Donna contact you to try, but you need to come up with a product. I need to have something. I need something I can put on my desk or play with on my, you know, lab bench or, I mean, you know what? I don't care. The point is that if somebody gets an invest in the future and they get something for it, oh my goodness, I put a Freedom's Phoenix logo on it. Hell, I'm, you know, ready to start. Cause see, it's really hot here in the summer, you know, and I don't have, environmentally controlled, area in my barn for this. So for me to go out there and work, it's unpleasant, so I do other stuff. Well, now it's nice weather. I'm just going back in there. Now that I know that I can make the carbon nanotubes, I'm just going to turn the sucker on and quit experimenting and just how much can I make? You know, I'm going, okay, boom, I got a big giant pile of here I go. I, you know, take an acetylene tank and it turned, and helium and acetylene, and it turned into freaking, there it is. All right? So, but to help you, because I got other stuff to do, all right? My whole point of doing that was in waiting for you. Okay, so now one less thing I got to do. So if we can promote instead of me doing it, well, I might do mine and say, yeah, and mine too. But, you know, if you can produce the multi-wall carbon nanotube powder with your suspended catalyst, do kind of, you know, play with, here it is. You do that and we can put it into a small little, I don't know, heck, you know, a 2-centimeter high freaking pyramid or something. We got to come up with some kind of, hopefully, a glass something, you know, perfume bottle or whatever. I don't care. We'll find something. You find something. You do that. That is a product we're going to put up for sale and raise some money, not later. Waiting on you now.
Yeah, that's good. But how is it useful? Is it useful?
Decoration, because I got it. It's mine. It's sitting on the desk. It's holding down my paper. What do I care?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
it's an
true,
investment. It's an excuse. It's a premium. I get something for giving you money. You see my point?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got
that. It's a novelty. Yeah. It's because it's cool. It's because you don't want to open it and the kids smear. It's like getting, you know, laser toner all over the freaking house. I mean, you know, hopefully we'll seal it and my 4-year-old granddaughter's not using it for, you know, face paint. You know,
Yeah. It's dangerous, right, for kids. It's not even... It still has some kind of toxic component because it's tubes, right? So, essentially.
Yeah, no, it could be asbestos. It, you know, I vent my exhaust out the side of my barn. You know, God knows what this stuff does to you. So, you're probably better off to have it in a sealed glass something. Okay?
Yeah,
but it's a decoration. It's an investment in the future. It's a logo that I supply, make, do, put on the desk, gazillions of dollars. We're making nanotubes. Screw you. Okay? Go to, real quick, sure. I got to get to the next thing, but go to freedomsphoenix.com.
Yes, I'm on the website. Yeah.
Okay, now on the top left of the front page, you'll see there's in red it says magazine, radio, TV, and it drops down. Go to the second one down, it says online magazine list.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, in the online magazine list, you scroll down to, okay, you can go ahead and restart it now, Donna. Just go ahead and stop that file and restart the video. Okay, you go down to October 2012. That's like October, 10 down or something.
2012, okay.
October open up that link.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, that cover that you see there, that's my lab. Now, the thing is where you see where it says the popular science, that was Norman Rockwell did that cover in 1920.
Oh, wow.
And it was about... perpetual motion machine from the bent workbench of, you know, what the heck. okay? And that was the point that I'm making, is get back to this. Now, you see the carbon nanotube catalyst formula on the thing, and that's not what I do, but I just, you know, put it up there because it looked cool, and somebody else did whatever, and I didn't like the way they did it anyway. But the you see I take the gases, I use the oxygen flow meters by hand, I make my catalyst, I put it in the tube furnace, looks almost identical to that, maybe a little bit bigger, and it comes out, boom, and then I take the bottom left rectifier, and I do, and done.
Good.
All right. Yeah. So we're going to be in contact. I get back to the show. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Sure.
Well, hold on a second. Just stay right there. We'll talk.
We have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Yeah, this is what I've been talking about. Man, we got Chad Hudspeth in. Oh, he did his doomsday prepper thing. They made a big deal. We're going to talk about endless food systems we're working on doing, kind of making progress, and we're going to talk about it, okay? And then we're going to have, you know, some time with the family and everything. They all came out very cool. Take a look at that beautiful family. Kind of, man, but you know one thing good about daughters is they create son-in-law, so that's good. So this is one thing. I still want to finish up with Vivek Nair on this, and then we were talking off air about what we might do, okay? This is what we might do. Now, I still got you there, Vivek?
Yes.
Okay, now this is the thing. I am so supportive of anybody, and this, I get a twofer, okay? I get a threefer. One, it's outside of the United States. Yuck. Two, I have somebody, you know, carbon emissions, global warming, we got to go. Oh, fine, you know, put my little reactor on your emissions, and I'll take all your carbon and turn nanotubes. Now what? What's your excuse? What, now, why aren't you doing, why now? And they go, damn it. Okay, then he's actually making the carbon nanotubes. It has a market, and let's go. And there's something going, there's something blocked, something, man, evil of. Well, of course I know what it is, because everything will be made differently. It's like going to the glass maker, to this maker, the buggy wick maker, and you go, you know what, we're going to use plastic. You know, we're going to go to the, you know, from iron to steel, from steel to plastic, the plastic nanotube. And, oh, and by the way, here's our everything. Space elevator, written a hard kind of shirt that lasts forever. It never gets stained. Tires that go for 10 years. Kind of. You see my point? You have no idea what's coming. I keep screaming this. Well, here we have a young student, 30 under 30 by MIT. Got to go to India. He's going, man, he's got, ooh, he's so smart. So there's no funding. You get funding for this kind of stuff in America, but here's a $3 million for you to sit on your butt and not make it. I mean, that's basically what's going on. Here in India, it's a little bit different structure. Get a couple of companies kind of, yeah, a little help here. I go, this is what we can do. This is what I want to do. One less thing I got to do is if we help him, this is how we're going to do it. In the funding center, when we create, we launch this in the shopping cart, one of the things Don and Gina right now are putting people on, like Chad and his whole, everything, we're going to be pushing all kinds of stuff. We set the infrastructure for it. I'm all about infrastructure. I don't want to have to do it. I just want infrastructure for everybody else to do it. And me. You don't mind if I do it too. But, you know, I'm like, everybody gets to do it. Why would I do it just for me? I do it for everybody, kind of, you know, environment, everybody. Now, this is what I would like to do. I want to have a little piece of whatever, you know, a carbon block, glass, enclosed, sealed, vial, something, paperweight on my freaking desk. I send money, you send me carbon nanotubes, I got, there it is right there. What are you going to do with it? Nothing. I'm going to sit there and look at it. You know, it's probably not safe to grandkids use it as war paint or anything. You know what I mean? Just that, you know, we got to, you know, it's nanotubes. It could be like asbestos and mess up whatever, you know, I don't know. So we'll just, and then the catalyst being metals could be poison. But I have no idea, and I don't want to take responsibility. We're going to seal it up, okay? So I want to have a little bitty pyramid kind of, you know, maybe it's an upside down pyramid. You know, whatever we want to do, we come up with. If you got, because you have some places that you are actually producing the nanotubes right now at a factory somewhere doing something, right?
Yes.
Okay. Are you creating product that people are wanting to buy?
Yes.
Okay.
But not in that high volume because our current reactor is very small.
Okay, so I mean, I'm talking, you're getting how many grams a day?
We produce around 2 kilograms a day.
2 kilograms a day? That's a whole bunch of paperweights. Okay, so I'm like, if we can create some kind of stuff, we'll put it up and you do fulfillment. And we get it not, you know, a month later, you know, and we do that. We want to work together. We can do some fundraising just because we can.
Okay. Sure.
All right. Done. Sure. Done. Great. Freaking done. Donna, awesome. We're going to have you go ahead and keep in contact with him. I want you to go ahead and start set up a shop with him. Call him later or Skype. Are you going to be available later today?
Yes, I'll be.
Donna will be in contact with you via email of when she and Gina are going to talk to you and help you set up their store thing. It's some of the beta testing that we're doing that we're launching for Black Market Friday, which is the day after Thanksgiving next Friday, a week from now. This is when we're going to be launching this, but I want to get everything ready for it so that we can do it and, you know, at least kind of semi-announce we got to come up with something. Now, but first we need a container to be able to sell this stuff. So you guys supporting the battery project that we're doing, a lot of different things. There's new kind of, you know, I'm finding out from him, you know, I a little bit magnetic ferrous material due to catalyst. My temperature goes down. I get more kind of, I'm going to rip them off, you know, you get over it. All right. So the thing is that. This is in support of that. You know, our audience is like, hey, we'll throw a little something to this highly recognized, prize-winning kind of individual that nobody else is supporting. The industry, because why? Because it doesn't benefit them. You know, we don't want it. Hell, everything that we make, all the factories you want to do, crap. We're like making steel and plastic and stuff. We don't want to mess with your stuff. We're making fuel and everything. Going, damn it. You know, so this is what we're going to do. Go ahead and work with Don on this, would you please?
Yes. Great.
All right. Excellent. Vivek, thank you very much for spending extra time with us.
Thanks a lot. Thanks.
And we're very excited about what you're doing. And I want to just stay in contact and kind of follow it from what we'll learn from it. And if I can get something on my desk, looks kind of cool, you know, more than, you know, what I'm making and you made it and I got mine and yours and mine's blacker than your black of the nano black, you know, and we'll just compare. Okay.
Yes.
All right, Vivek, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah.
Peace,
thanks
brother.
A lot, Ernest. Yeah. It was a great talking to you.
You too. And Donna will send you a link to all this stuff, and you can share it with your friends. It's all good. All right?
Sure. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Bye-bye. How freaking cool is that?
That's very cool.
I mean, you know, I am just like, you can see that this is exactly why I do this way. It's just to inspire this. You know, so the same thing is happening with what you're doing. You know, it's kind of like, that's exactly, you go, screw them. I'll just do it. And you created your own product, endlessfoodsystems.com. So you're getting, you know, and I'm so bit, but I'm making some progress. You like my sink thing out there?
Yeah, that's very nice.
That's very nice. That's going to make that, you know, and I'll show you. And I think you might help me put it up today. All I got to do is just plug it in, screw it, and done. But I need some man strength to just kind of hold and I'm level stuff. So we're going to see what I did is, you know, see if you can see it. Yeah, you can kind of see the exposure's bad, but you take a look at, four. Okay, you look at this right there. To the right, you see the sink. It's hard to make out, you know, because I got this big white tarp because it's raining out. Yeah, it rains in Arizona someday. And here's Chad's equipment, all these tanks and the floating tanks and the beds. And I get calls, like Tim Fry called me and he goes, hey, Ernie. You're going to like have some green stuff in there, right? You know? And I'm going, I can't do five things at one time. And I'm making it to where it's easy to do, but we have so many different, we got the fish in, and then we got to worry about the temperature of the water on that. Or the verticals we built and sanded and cut and melted and heat and got all the vertical planters that we're doing, the verticals there, and that looks like that might work. And then we have, you know, the sink area. So I'm getting everything done because once I start growing, I'm not going to have the time to be building and stuff. You know, I got to get the infrastructure all done. And it's just, I'm so busy with so many things, and we've been working heavy with Gina getting us caught up, and we're starting to make progress so I could actually start doing some stuff. So I don't want to be too embarrassed when Chad comes by and he goes, seriously? I mean, come on. This is not that hard. But, you know, I tell you what my big problem right now is when two of the tanks drain at the same time during the bell siphoning, you know, it overwhelms the drain.
I saw
and
that.
It, you know, so I think it's the incline. We just need, you know, greater ink. I don't know how we're going to, whatever, we'll figure it out. But the thing is that it made a little tweak and stuff is what we're doing. And in addition to the Aquadome, I'm not going to do a hashtag Mandome. It'll be LED lights and nice double sinking kind of. It looks very, very cool. You know, we'll have pictures for you next week on this, you know, as we go into Thanksgiving. But, you know, Chad Hudspeth, when we come back. Freedom Summit 2014, this February in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. This summit has been crafted to provide a glimpse of the future and how best to position yourself and your loved ones as we transition away from authoritarianism to a voluntarist society. Don't be surprised. Be informed, be entertained, and network with Generation Next, the inheritors of the future that are already creating the infrastructure of tomorrow today. Details at freedomsummit.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, I'm sorry, we were yakking, damn it, how long was that? So we're sitting here just talking, me and Chad, and Mr. Bob Anderson from Tonopah came in, and, you know, we're going to talk, did you happen to catch the Doomsday Prepper of him on?
I did.
You did? This is, what'd you think of that?
You know, I thought it was... You know, I kind of thought it was as I expected the show to be. You know, they have an agenda that they're doing there, but I thought it came across fairly well.
Yeah, no, I thought it was, you know, from what I feared they were going to do, you know, you got to get it right up on the mic. You know, what I feared that they were going to do and what actually came out, I'm going, yeah, he got to say what he wanted to say. I mean, Chad, how'd you feel about it? You got to say what you wanted to say and you didn't come off too, you know, crazy?
Yeah, I think that they did a pretty accurate job, I feel like. I mean, you know, it was enhanced and sensationalized.
Sensationalized.
Of course. They were always looking for drama. You know, the whole time they filmed for 6 days. And so they had a terabyte of information of on film. And so, you know, we didn't get to see the show before it went out. I had no idea they could have made it anything.
Oh, yeah. And that was definitely a fear I had when I heard you were going to do it. I was like, oh, this will be kind of interesting.
No, I told him, Sam, I'm going, I know how they, oh. You know, but I'm not sure what their agenda is, why they would do it that way. Why are they trying to marginalize or fringeize this kind? I mean, is it a marketing thing? Is it people? Is it they just want to pay? I don't even understand their motivation.
You know, did you catch that Great American Blackout or whatever show that was on?
I keep hearing about it, but I don't know what they're talking about.
I have a whole different mindset on it. I think they're I think they're scaring us to prepare. I think it's a deliberate thing to get the population to start to prepare because they know it's coming.
They're just one, you know, they're prepping it. They're doing us a favor, a solid.
I think they know that they're not going to be able to deal with it by themselves, and they're trying to scare people into getting ready so that we're not completely flat-footed when it happens.
You know, this is the one thing that I see in the Doomsday Prepper. It's always, oh, he's prepping for, you know, nuclear disaster, de la water, EMP, sun pulse, zombie apocalypse, pandemic, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then Chad gets up and says what? What were we preparing for?
Well, a false flag. Did they actually let that? I can't remember.
Democide!
Democide, yeah, for sure.
It's a government is the biggest threat of the killing. I don't know how they're going to do it, but that's who I'm worried about doing it.
And you never hear that. I mean, you never hear anybody talk about democide, and that's the largest killer in the history of mankind.
When you did that, I go, whatever the hell else they did is all worth it just for you even freaking saying that. I was just here grinning. But I didn't get to watch it, we were busy doing whatever. I called you the next day. I mean, the next morning. I mean, I'm doing my morning, constitutional, and I'm just, I get up, and I'm like, I got call Chad, you stallion. I just saw Don, and I saw it last night. You so win. Okay. And your family is so beautiful and nice and sweet and normal. I mean, you know, and the girls. I felt your pain when it's time to, you know, test out the tunnel. You know, we're going to do the tunnel, because that was kind of part. Tell me how the tunnel came into this. You know, did they kind of sex it up with that?
Yeah. You know, when they called me and they said, hey, we picked you to be on the show, and we're going to focus on a build, something cool. And they're like, okay, what do you want to build for us? And I'm like, well, hey, let me build an aquaponic system. You know, let me build a thermosiphon solar collector to collect heat, you know, and circulate it without a water pump. That's pretty cool. But they were like, oh, we need something like, we need a tunnel. We need a bunker in your backyard.
We need just a little craziness.
You're not crazy enough.
And so I was like, well, I mean, if I have to do that, you know, to promote the business, then okay, I'll do it.
Well, you never got to say your business name or anything, which is kind of suspected. But, you know, you got your name out there, and they Google, and he's not crazy. And and he sells, what was your web traffic increase? Did it help at all?
Yeah, it did. You know, people really had to look for us, but it did, it increased probably, it doubled. It doubled the next day or so. So every time, and then the show reruns, you know, a lot. It's on all the time now.
Yeah, hell yeah. I want more Chad, okay? So this, I was really happy for you. And how'd your family feel about it? They like, ew, you know, I didn't have my hair right. Or, I mean, what was their focus?
Oh, I think everybody was fine with it. As far as, like, my relatives and stuff, everybody feels like it was all right. You know, they didn't make us too crazy.
You know.
And we're not.
Oh, but they tried, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it was See, the thing is that Bob and I have had experience in this and dealing with media for, like, 20 years. And, you know, we always go up and we go, all right, this is how we do it. You have the mic off, and then you turn it on, and they're finally doing it. You talk to them, whatever, and then they got the camera on. Okay, we turn the mic on. We go, statement one, statement two, statement three, and then you turn off the mic, step to the side, and that's all you get. Oh, but we want to go. I know. But we need, I know. I know exactly what you want. You want me to just keep you rambling so you'll take that one little tip. And the fact that you went 6 days, and that's all they got, you the freaking man. You the man. I bet you were conscious the whole time of it, too.
I was very conscious the whole time.
Not a single word comes out of my mouth that I don't want on national television.
And it's tough. I mean, I'm telling you, they were at our door at 7 a.m., and they didn't leave until 10 to midnight. That was 6 days straight. We had to wear the same clothes every day, so Debbie's in there doing laundry at midnight. So we can get up at 7 a.m. the next morning, put the same clothes back on, go through it again. So, I mean, by day 4 or 5, you're just like,
oh, they want it to look like it was the same clothes one day thing?
Well, so they could edit and put, something from day 6 on day 2 or whatever. So it was very tiring. In fact, the first clip, like the little clip they put out as like an advertisement of me sitting there, that interview was done at like, it was probably 1 a.m. in the morning. And I was just blown out. I was done. And to me, I guess because I know myself, I thought, man, I look like I've, you know, been up for 4 days straight or something.
You know, this is, I tell you, it's Donna. Did you able to get any pieces of the show? Okay, so we go to the show archive page, and there's two clips here. We'll go ahead and try and do that. I mean, when did you watch it, Bob?
With my workload here, I haven't been able to keep the calendar straight. I just caught it. It was a week or so ago, I think.
I just saw it, not too long ago, and I'm going, wow, this is, I was impressed with they kind of told the story. I mean, your thing, they kind of, you know, melded the tunnel into the story. It's just when they come, we can make it out to the back and crash through and we leave and whatever. And I'm like, seriously, you know, I mean,
my question is, what are you going to really use that for?
Well, it's a pretty, well, I mean, you know, you can keep stuff down there, but I want to make it a theater room. I think it'd be an awesome theater room.
Yeah. What happens is, I'm going to try and pull this out. Go ahead and describe it to everybody how the actual, what do you call it? A bunker or something?
Yeah.
I mean,
safe. Well, we actually
panic room.
It's like a 3-part thing, and they didn't show. I think the coolest part of the whole thing is the entrance to it, which they didn't show much. Which is all right, you know, that's fine. But we have like a hidden door. It looks like a bookcase, and you go into that, and you're basically standing in a concrete safe room, which is pretty cool in itself. We've got some surveillance in there and ways to look out and see what's going on, and then if it's unsafe, you go down a little ladder, and then you crawl into the bunker, which is like a 20-foot by 8-foot container, and then you have a secondary escape tunnel.
Okay. It bookcase in the bedroom. You kind of push it, open a little room, go down. You're into a 20-foot sea container, you know, a storage container. And at the other end, it's got a tunnel that goes to the back of the property, pops up under a kind of a faux trash can in your Jeep and go.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, peaceful, easy feeling. You know, this is, I'm glad this stuff. You can see how it's just like law of attraction. It all starts coming together. We get a guy, you know, making carbon nanotubes from India to supply the raw material for all the kind of we get to do, and they can suck it and we survive. Then you have, you know, Mr. Anderson just happens to come in. Hello. And Mr. Anderson, he brought, you know, the blackout. What the heck was the name of that show?
I think it was called The Great American Blackout, and the whole premise was they had some sort of other country, you know, did a cyber attack, you know, probably revenge for the ones we do on them, and they took our grid out, and it was kind of, you know, some of it was interesting, there was some drama, you know, because they had to make it interesting, but literally within about 6 days, it came back after about 6 days, I mean, people were on the verge of starting eating each other, you know, for the drama of this thing, but there were some interesting points to take away from it. I mean, it wasn't totally garbage.
You know, I'll tell you the one thing that really I wanted to emphasize was when they did the movie Die Hard with the whatever the heck it was, when they fire sale, everything must go. Okay, they turned the power went out. But the only way that they could turn off the power is they had to go to the plant and physically do it because it was insulated from the grid. Now, you work out at Palo Verde. I bet they take this cyber secure. You're not allowed to get in, and the wires don't go to, and the firewall of the whatever, pretty seriously.
Very seriously.
So this is so. What happened in 2004? We started covering the thing. The FBI came up with InfraGuard, and they, you know, it's all voluntary. You know, it's a private, you know, government kind of, you know, we'll make you later. We're just gonna, you know, get it going now and get voluntary kind of VP of whatever. Get in, and here is our software. And then they started coming out with a Stussex or something, yeah. And a nuclear power screwed with you thing. Well, let me tell you how they did that. It was called InfraGuard, okay? They need access to the plants to be able to do this.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, that's one of the things we look at, and we're going like, well, if we did it to them, well, the Iranians, Middle East near it, those people aren't stupid. They invented math. You know, there's not, you know, they're very capable of doing it right back to us. And, you know, it's just like all the blowback that Ron Paul talked about. What, you don't think they want to sit there and poke us right back in the eye for what we did to them?
And do it creatively and cheaply and where it hurts?
Yeah, and they're more than capable of doing the same thing and giving us a computer virus that'll infect all of our power plants. So, I mean, we better be careful who we poke.
And Bob walks out of the nuclear power plant, gets in his car, takes a 5-minute drive to his house. He's totally isolated, off-grid. Solar just sucks to be y'all, okay? And I'm going, so I want to be like Bob and Chad, okay? So, Chad, you know, with this, all this in mind, you know, you're kind of like, I think that there's a threat, and you're talking democide. I mean, is this a genuine, I mean, you're a man of faith. You know, you have your family of faith. You have people, churches that are looking, saying, "Hey, man, you know what? Put you in contact, trying to encourage Phoenix Christian Junior Senior High to, you know, kind of do that. Hopefully, that'll have some fruition. You know, you're helping us. You know, we're getting all. Why? Now, and you, and in your business, so you own the roofing company or something. I mean, you got some money. You're living up in the, you know, Northeast Phoenix, Scottsdale, Paradise Valley kind of. You know, I got a couple of coins. My kids are going to a nice school. My wife's happy. She's not too hot, too cold. She's got the marble floor. I mean, you know, just kind of, you're doing okay. You know, and you focus on this. Why?
Well, you know, honestly, with all the prepper stuff aside, it's about the quality of food. And if you start to dig in and look at the health of America, and you see, you know, the introduction of GMOs into our food supply 20 years ago, and if you ever have seen a chart of that, you see GMOs increasing more and more and more as a percentage of our food supply, and you see all kinds of problems increase with it, autism, you know, you name it, it increases with it. And so when I saw the aquaponics, I was like, this is the answer to so much more than just being able to be food sufficient. This is the answer to health, and it's the answer to many, many, many health issues and problems around the world.
It's not just being able to sustain yourself in calories and breathing in and out, and, you know, while you're drooling and glassy-eyed, it's like, oh, my goodness, you're healthier and your mind works and your body functions.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, so I... And describe the system. What you did is you took aquaponics and you go, okay, well, I can take this aquaponic concept and modularize it. You know, we saw you. That's how we met you. It was at one of the Prepper Fest over here. And Steve Mueller from Hope System, H2OPESystems.com. The Hope System is a power and water purification and pump pressurizer. It's what's pressurizing my sink out here. Yeah, I'm just going, I got all the goodies yet. I'm excited, man. I'm ready to rock, and it starts freaking raining. When does that happen, you know? So I go, finally, one day I get to really work on it, and it rained. So I'm going, oh, man, it's just, oh, it's always something. So you create this modular system that people can, you can ship it on a pallet. Done. Hey, describe that a little bit, why you went that way.
Well, you know, growing up, I was a pretty handy guy, and I just assumed everybody was handy and anybody could build anything, and tried to patent a product in 1999 and realized that most people aren't handy. And so when I came across aquaponics and the power of it, I looked around and saw that nobody was building, you know, a put-together kit that would be easy for the average person to slap together and have success with aquaponics. And so I thought, well, gosh, we gotta make this available to the public. And so that's why I spent a year or so trying to design something that's very, very easy for people to have success with.
Well, I mean, how easy is it? You know, somebody gets it, they turn it on, and, you know, mine's not making green yet. Of course, it'd probably help if I plant something. But, you know, the thing, it's, well, what I'm doing, I'm so limited on time, but I'm really trying to give a great representation of this. I mean, it is, you know, it's going to be cool.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I'm really doing the coolness factor, and it's not until it's my man dome I ain't unveiling, you know, because I'm just damn. Because we putting in the sound system and the camera system and really emphasize and show this. I tell you one thing that I was thinking of doing, Bob, is we got the turkeys. Okay, so for Thanksgiving, they're going to do the turkey harvest, yeah, you know, whatever. And I'm thinking, I'm going, I may not want dead animal stuff all over my dome, so I probably wouldn't do it there. We'll do it out back. But I was thinking, you know, I just suck it up and just in, and you pan down, there's a turkey, boom, done, and start dressing it out and everything, finished. And I go, ugh. So my initial reaction on how I'm doing this is going to be videotape because, damn it, we just got to, you know. So what about you? Are you big, giant, you know, give me an animal and I'll just skin it?
Absolutely. If people could only see what goes on at the commercial slaughterhouses, they wouldn't eat meat.
Yeah, this is probably a lot healthier, but so we're looking forward to that. What about, that was one thing on the Doomsday Prepper thing is you did, here we're doing the fit. Was all that fresh for your kids? Had they gone through this before, or was that the first time they seen a lot of this was while they're being filmed?
Well, that truly was the first time we had pulled a fish out of our system and filleted it. So that was the first time my girls had seen that. Now, we've done it, you know, going fishing and stuff before, but not out of the aquaponics.
And did you eat it?
Yeah, we grilled it right there, and I'm surprised they didn't show that more on the show. I mean, I filleted it right there on the lid of the system. We threw it right on the grill and took it in, and that's when we had the discussion about Demicide.
You know, the other thing is that you use some kind of composting for the methane to power your grill.
Right. Yeah, you take your food scraps, and basically these are systems that are known around the world, but for some reason in America, nobody knows about biogas much. And so I built a little biogas system just to kind of proof of concept, and throw your food scraps in there and stuff, and the anaerobic bacteria begin to, you know, break it down and forms a methane gas, and so then you can use that to cook with or light or whatever.
Well, that was, I, you know, that was just kind of side effect of, you know, here it is, and they didn't show that part either.
They didn't talk about it.
What was their focus? I didn't even really get it. I'm glad you got what you needed to put. They really focused so much on that tunnel as, you know, kind of, I'm seriously, you know, I mean, it's better not. I mean, it's good to have a safe room, I kind of hid, I'm survived and I can get away kind of, you know, I'd rather have one than not, but that was not, you know, that's really not what you were about, but that's what they, cause.
You know, they got to keep the show sizzle, you know, they got to keep it exciting, so.
I'm seriously, there's so much more that I find interesting than this, you know, I don't know who their market is. You know, we'll find out. But we're going to go ahead and play, when we come back, you know, a segment of the show. James Babb, Davy Barker, John Bush, Catherine Bleich, John Buttrick, Tim Fry, Will Grigg, Charles Goyette, Anthony Gregory, Richard Grove, Ernest Hancock, Rosa Corey, Greg Peterson, Larkin Rose, Paul Rosenberg, Butler Schaefer, Frank Tamburi, Karen Lupo, Mark Victor, Cody Wilson, all speakers at Freedom Summit 2014. Check it out, freedomsummit.com.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
In a situation where people are trying to force their way into our home, that would be a situation where we have to decide, are we going to try to fight our way out of it? It might be much easier to just make a stealthy escape.
I'm going to survive a genocidal siege by building a tunnel that will lead my family to safety.
Tunnel? From the storage thing?
That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
We could escape to the very back corner of our yard and to our bug-out vehicle and secretly escape from there.
All right, we're ready. All right. So this is going to be cut open, and we're going to have a shelf system that's flush with the wall, but it'll actually be a door that opens to the inside.
Building this tunnel is not easy. None of this stuff has been easy so far. It's been very difficult. But it's necessary.
I'm, like, really glad that this is actually getting built so I can go down there and have food and everything if I do get left alone, so I know where to go.
If it's our time to go, then it's our time to go. But if we still have work here on this earth to do, then I feel like we'll be able to continue on through our tunnel and fulfill that destiny.
Doomsday Preppers. Now, they didn't say a single freaking word about the aquaponics when they were building up to this, because it went for months. I mean, they were building up to this. I'm going, man, are we going to talk about the, you know, why you're doing this, you know, kind of this democide? Because I didn't know this. We didn't talk. You're like, you know, we didn't. I don't care. You can do whatever because seriously, there's a tunnel that, well, they wanted to do the aquaponic thing. But we didn't talk about why. It wasn't until I saw the episode that you're going, hey, man, biggest threat to humanity and certainly, you know, in this country everywhere is their own freaking government or slaughtering people left and right. So you're going, you know, that's what I'm prepping for. So go ahead and, you know, give your spiel that you gave to, you know, millions of Americans from Chad Hudspeth, you know, said, you know, this is what I'm really afraid of and why I'm doing this. Go.
Yeah, well, you know, we're truly not fearful. You know, our strength, our source comes from Jesus Christ. But I think we're also, you know, we need to be wise, good stewards with what God's given us. And if you look at history, you don't have to go very far to find out there's been close to probably 250, 300 million people in the last 100 years that have been killed by their own governments. And, the first thing that people go to, and I noticed the announcer guy, you know, when I made that statement, he went straight to Hitler. You know, well, there was 11 million Jews killed or something like that. Well, he was one of the small ones. You know, we're talking about Stalin and Mao and Pol Pot. And, I mean, you're talking about so many people that it's beyond, we can't even calculate the number of people. And so that's the thing. We have to have our eyes open. We got to be awake to what's going on.
And sometimes it's something as easy as being able to fillet a fish.
Yeah.
You know, there it is. Or you can do the Gollum thing and just start biting in the back of it. So I'm going, okay. So we're learning a little fillet. Have you had the girls actually fillet a fish yet? Do you get
no.
that going?
No, they're no.
It was tough getting them in the tunnel. I thought that was precious. I'm sitting there going, hey, man, zombie apocalypse is coming. You know, let's get over the, I'm afraid. I don't want to go in. I'm going, I want to see how he gets this done. How hard was that to
actually
get her in?
You know what? She was acting. She was not scared at all. She was excited about going through the tunnel.
Really?
Yes,
they tell her to do that?
Yes, they did.
These guys so suck, man. I am just like, you know, me first. Well, she did it really well.
She did do well. She had me. Because they told her to do that without me. I didn't know she was acting.
Yeah, reality TV. Not.
Oh, they wanted Chad to go, get your ass there, grab, throw her in, kind of not pushing. They're looking for some drama.
Hey, and you know what? The other thing, that scene was about 1 in the morning on the last day, the last shoot, and they were rushing to get all that done. We were totally wiped out. The kids had already actually gone to sleep. I think they had slept for an hour or so, and then they got ready to do that shot, and so we had to wake them up and get them back in the tunnel.
Wow. Had they already gone into the tunnel before they did that scene?
No, that was the very first time.
And you know what I saw, the one improvement that I could see? You know those rock epoxied handholds that they put on when you rock wall climbing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had those up on the sides in the tunnel, it'd be easier to pull yourself with.
Well, there's a lot of things that have, I mean, seriously, we were rushing like crazy to get done for this last scene, and they actually came back 2 weeks later and shot another day's worth, and it had given me time to do a lot of things. They didn't show any of those improvements. None. We painted the inside, put carpet in it, put a rope in the bottom of the tunnel so you can pull yourself along.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of improvements. Put a locked closet in there with our stuff. We got some cool chairs, you know, that hang from the ceiling. It's a pretty cool thing now, but they didn't show any of that.
When I go, I showed me the bookcase and how to go in. I went into the room. I'm going, wow, imagine, Bob, you got sea containers. I mean, you know how big they are, a 20-foot one that you go down into it, and wow, man, it's like a TV theater room. I mean, you could, and it's well lit. You know, you had some storage. You had some hanging chairs in there, or something like little sky chairs kind of deal. You know, so I'm going, wow, this is, I want one. You know, I want one. So you're probably glad you got it, better than not, right?
Sure, absolutely. It's fun.
Okay, so now that is just to, but then when you leave, you left all your aquaponics stuff back, you know? So I'm going, need to put it on a trailer. So you did get contacted by someone. They're going, hey, man, I want to do this, but I want it mobile.
Yeah, we've had actually several requests or people that have said, well, hey, is there any way to put this on a trailer? And so I think definitely you could do it. It's the problem is the weight. The water is so heavy. And so if you were going to try to transport a system, you'd have to empty a lot of the water out of it just so that the trailer could handle that weight, you know, going down the road. But you wouldn't have to empty it all the way.
Yeah, this is but the system can't. Well, they're showing it now. It just stacks inside each other and be shipped.
Yeah, it's by freight. You know, we could ship anywhere. Actually, we just shipped a system to Puerto Rico, the first one outside the United States, and it was very expensive to ship down there. It was $1,800 just in shipping to send it to Puerto Rico.
And what they need it for, just because?
There's a lady down there that's super excited and fired up, and she's going to be a distributor for us in Puerto Rico, I guess, and that she's really fired up. We've got an off-grid solar panel that we just got done for it and offering now, and so she's fired up about that, and I think they have a lot of intermittent power issues down there.
Yeah, they do. That was one we had from Africa, you know, guys on, I can't remember the name of the unit, but it was kind of like a Hope System thing, but it was, yeah, you know, scalable up. It was a guy from Africa that worked for high-tech semiconductor here and just kind of, hey, back home, they don't have power and they need... That's right. Bob remembers. You were here.
Yeah, I don't remember the name either, but yeah, it was a nice little system.
Yankee something. And it was very interesting that they developed this not from a first world country aspect of we need to have to compete with what they go. No, we need a simple, cheap, last long time, you know, lithium ion compact, do the village in Africa kind of thing. And then all of a sudden they start ramping it up for military use. And when they have, you know, Haiti has a flood, Puerto Rico gets a hurricane, they get, you know, all of a sudden their unit is there. And I'm going, okay, this is really, but there's always some kind of pressure or opposition and it doesn't develop. It's always from guys like you that do that. Why? I mean, there's no industry for they it doesn't fit into their system. They don't, I mean, what's the resistance to this kind of living?
You know, I really don't know. And even in our own little solar panel, you know, I went to several places that manufacture panels and stuff trying to get something done, and it was like pulling teeth. It's very difficult to try to find somebody that would just build us something that would work. I know it's out there. And so we wound up finding a guy that is kind of like us. He just resourceful and put us a little system together, and that's what we're doing.
Done. Boom shakalaka.
I think that's the problem. You talk about people being handy, and I think when you really get down to it, it requires labor and to be handy, and it ain't that many of them out there.
The screwdriver. Man, I know. When we did our first dome, had some of the guys come and help, and I'm going, wow, it's like that? I spent most of my time just showing them, you know, every little stage or whatever. You got a couple of guys that know how to do it. I'm like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, if it ever gets bad, it's going to be bad.
It's going to be bad. We're going to spend a year or two just showing people how to survive a month. Are we going to be able to make it, you know, enough people surviving so that they know how to survive? I mean, that's what we're contending with, and we're trying to make sure that you survive.
Yay, public school system.
those aren't going to teach you how, okay?
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome back to Declare Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Ooh, that was good. I got my voice back. Can you do that? Come on, everybody. Come on, sing. No? Okay. So we have Bob Anderson and Mr., you know, the... Not Tonopah Rob, that's the farmer guy. It's Tonopah Bob. I want to get them right. Now, Bob works at the nuclear power plant Palo Verde. He is on the supervising, taking... What the heck is your title anyway? I mean, it keeps changing all the time.
Yeah, just team leader, moving in the fuel department.
So you're, you know, make, you know, those rods aren't good no more. We're going to put them over here and put some new ones in, make more power.
Yeah, from the time it comes on site till the time it leaves site, I babysit it.
Do you glow?
No.
Okay. So he's got a few more years ago. He's going to make it to retirement.
It's just my natural glow.
Yeah, natural. That's right. Okay. Now, let me see under your hat. Show me. You didn't shave your head. Usually in the outage, you're shaving your head. How come you didn't shave your head this
hour? Well, it's the fall outage. I just do it in the spring outage.
It's hot. Know. All right. So you have to strap on the suit. You know, do you do that anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, suit strapper honor. I mean, you're going through all kinds of detectors and stuff. You know, and uranium is, you know, man, there's a lot of problems, and, you know, I mean, hopefully, I mean, Palo Verde is a newer plant, and you don't have, you know, all these problems and everything, but, you know, Chad was talking about there's another material that didn't get, you know, taken up. We want to talk about that a little bit. Well, tell the audience what you're talking about, Chad.
Well, you know, I've always been interested in alternative forms of energy besides solar, and I came across thorium maybe 2-3 years ago, and when I started researching thorium, it was just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's so much more abundant than uranium.
Safer.
It's safer.
Easier.
But the problem was that you can't make bombs out of it.
Well, then what the hell do we want to do it for? I mean, you know, that was the whole thing. See, they're going, look, we get to make all these bombs, and we can have nuclear power. Isn't it great and wonderful? How about we just, you know, make cheaper, easier neighborhood in my basement thorium, which is a reason I knew about this. Is, God, where was it? I had read something. We had it on Freedom's Phoenix, but eventually there was a young kid. He was a teenager that made a thorium reactor. And they went, oh, hell no. You know, this, no. For so many reasons, no. And he did a TED Talk talking about, you know, he's a genius kid. And he's like, you know, hey, you know, I can be in service of humanity, but obviously they want me in service of not or something, you know. So he was talking about thorium and how you could make thorium reactors and be a lot more efficient. I can have it in a refrigerator, you know, buried in my backyard and have enough power for me and my neighbors for like ever.
Yes. Yeah, there's a couple of TED Talks on thorium. There's another guy who talked about, you know, if we were going to take it to the moon, because it doesn't have to be this big, robust, super pressurized like the water reactors that we have now.
Yeah, because the only thing is, all it does is it just gets hot. I mean, it's just making steam, same thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just less volatile, less, but it doesn't make nuclear weapons.
Right.
But heads, man. See, I'm thinking there's something else going on.
Well, you know, I mean, part of it is that if you go back in history, it's, you know, mankind's being lazy. You know, I mean, this obviously is some nefarious action behind it, but a lot of it just
nefarious.
A lot of it just came down to is, you know, why electric cars are having a hard time going? Because the infrastructure's not there. Well, they don't want to go to thorium because guess what? They already built the uranium infrastructure. They already built the uranium infrastructure because of the war machine.
Yeah, but my thing is, it's not that whoever it is, doesn't want to do it themselves. They don't want anybody else doing it. That's where I have a problem with the power of government, the centralization of government. There's always somebody you got to get permission slip from, and they say no. Or you just do it, and they go, damn it, you did it, now it's a crime, you did it, and we didn't give you permission. You know, it's in that situation where, you know, that which is not forbidden is required, you know, and a whole bunch of forbidden stuff. And the required crap is stupid, like vaccines or something. I mean, you know, I'm going, there's something else going on. Bob and I kind of prepare for the after. This is going to fall. And what is the transition during that time? So you're talking about this blackout episode. What the heck was that? Who did that anyway?
I think it was on Discovery Channel or History Channel or something like that. I didn't watch it, but I heard about it.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was they more or less had some country, you know, obviously somebody we'd messed
pick
with
one.
In the past.
Yeah,
they decided to, you know, back at you, and they basically, a computer virus took out the grid. And then they had, you know, 5 or 6 different little groups of people they were following as to what would happen. They had one guy who was up in the mountains, and he had his little bunker and all the stuff, your typical prepper. And, of course, the marauder got him right near the very end. And he had kids who were trapped in an elevator over here at ASU, and like say within about 6 days they were ready to chew each other's legs off on the roof of a building because they couldn't get down because their cell phone wouldn't work, you know. And it was, so they went through a couple of different families of what was going on over the course of this 6-day period until the power came back.
Chad, you and your family going to be okay?
Oh, we'll be fine. You know, we're on the edge, the north edge of Phoenix, but that's not safe. I mean, let's get realistic. If something happened, if the power was to go out for 6 days or longer, people are going to start moving out, and you'd have to be 100 miles away, I would think.
Before. Yeah, can you imagine what, you know, I've told you before, what will Phoenix be like middle of August and the power went out for 4 or 5 days in a row?
Sucks!
It would be a free fire zone in about 24 hours.
Sucks! I would kill for an ice cube. I mean, you know, it's kind of, well, maybe not, but I don't know, maybe. I mean, it gets freaking hot and you can't even sleep.
Yeah, won't be water. I mean, the water systems won't work. Air conditioning won't work. It'll get pitch black at night. You know, you think it's dark. You've been out of my place at night when it's dark.
Heck, the stars light the freaking. I was amazed at just star glow. You can actually see no moon, no nothing. You're going, well, I can kind of see. I mean, if you stand there in the dark long enough.
That's what it's going to be like in town. And, I mean, people are going to be hot and miserable, no water. Pretty soon the food will be gone. I mean, it'll get ugly pretty quick.
I don't know, Chad. You got enough to feed your entire neighborhood or Phoenix?
Well, you know, that's the whole thing about the bunker and the tunnel. You know, that would only serve one purpose, I think. If there truly was some kind of nuclear attack or nuclear explosion and there was fallout in the air, then that would be a good place to go for a couple of days, but not for months or weeks or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm doing. So what is it that you're, when you made, I'm glad you emphasized, you know, look, we're not really afraid. We're people of faith. We just have, you know, responsibility to be good stewards of the gift of life. I mean, there's no reason, the Lord's calling me. It's time for me to go lay down in the street and let the Hummers run over me. I mean, you know, I'm going, no. So it's just, it's part of our responsibility as human beings to keep breathing in and out and do it without violating somebody else's breathing in and out. You know, I mean, it's really not more complicated than that. So you go, okay, we are wanting to replicate this technology that you're perfecting and learning about and doing, and people are interested because it's so productive. I mean, it really, 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 I know it does. And the thing is, we've done a little testing, we see it sprouting and everything and so on. What happened is we did start planning, and then I was doing, gauging the pH in it, and was adding hydrochloric or sulfuric acid to it to change the pH. And when I did that, poured it on, I didn't know she had planted the seeds, getting them seeds to be dead, okay? So I go, you know, wait, well, just let me go ahead and finish this before we start. But you should share this with me, okay, that you're planting stuff, you know, because I'm not done with the pH on it. Well, then, you know, the fish are in there, and they're growing, and now we're doing the heating of the water with the lily pad black. You saw Donna out there doing that. That'll give him an extra couple of weeks of not dead. And then we, you know, doing that, just so much stuff. But, you know, the entire Aqua Dome system out here, the double dome and everything, all that can be packed on that trailer.
Yeah.
You know, and we go somewhere. And with the Hope system, I'm the food producing, fish growing, vegetable having, power and purified water guy. How big's my harem going to be? Okay.
But we're coming for you.
Yeah. See? Exactly. So there's a lot of, it's a cultural thing. We got to do the cultural thing. We're going to have the marauding, you got it and I want it and it's mine and my gun's bigger. I mean, how are we going to, we have to distribute, you know, defense distributed. We got to distribute power, food, everything so that we all survive in peace. You going to help? Freedom Summit 2014 will be held in Phoenix, Arizona from Friday, February 14th through Sunday, February 16th at the Sheraton Crescent Resort. Details at freedomsummit.com. The Freedom Summit, where the great minds of the modern freedom movement come together. Since 2001, the Freedom Summit has annually featured the best and the brightest minds detailing our current status of freedom. The Freedom Summit has featured many of the rising stars of the Liberty Movement before they were proven right. Our list of speakers are now well known to the Liberty Movement, and they accurately predicted what is now common knowledge to many of us. But now what? The 2014 Freedom Summit has been crafted to provide a glimpse of the future and how best to position yourself and your loved ones as we transition away from authoritarianism to a voluntarist society. We are now preparing for what comes next. Don't be surprised. Be informed, entertained, and network with Generation Next, the inheritors of the future that are already creating the infrastructure of tomorrow. Learn more at freedomsummit.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
You grew up tall and proud, in the shadow of the mushroom cloud, which now voices can be heard.
American way. You know, what is that? You know, let's ask Chad. You know, that was the kind of one thing that we got, you know, you American, you red blood American. You know, it's kind of, you know, what do you think your ultimate goal is? We're going to get everybody to pledge. I mean, you know, what was it we're looking to accomplish? What is our advocacy for the type of system that you're hoping they'll survive or what you want to replace it with or something? Because there's going to be an after, I think. You know, what's that going to look like? What are you hoping for?
Well, yeah, the whole idea of aquaponics is for it's a simpler way for people to grow their own food. And so if the knowledge of how to do that and how to grow it, whether it's buying a kit or just figuring out how to do it so you can build your own, that's very, very, very important. You know, if you look back in the Depression, 95% of the population either lived on or knew how to grow their own food. And yet there were still 10 million people that died in the 10 years, 1929 to 1939 from you know, nutritional problems. Imagine today. Today, it's the opposite. 95% of the people live in urban areas and have no idea how to grow their own food. Can you imagine how
it's
bad
grown?
It would be?
I thought it was manufactured off assembly line that wound up on, you know, in the supermarket. I mean,
soon.
Yeah, it is kind of done. It's people. Okay, so I'm...
yeah, it's coming.
Soylent whatever the heck out of a Petri dish. And they go, we're all solved. We're just going to, you know, it's everything a growing body needs. And you get the porridge coming out of the spigot, you know. And you have hot water, cold water, kind of sort of... porridge. I mean, it just comes in your sink.
Yeah, you're gonna, you know, what do you call it? Print, you know, you're gonna print a banana. Or whatever.
You know, don't laugh, man.
I don't.
You know, I sit there and I think about, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, you get your minimum daily bread, Roman bread and circuses kind of comes out of the tap. You know, I bet you it'd be kind of the form of a thick beer. You know, heck, that's what they fed the slaves. You know, it was liquid, beer was liquid bread, you know, and it gave you, you know, some of the new carbohydrates and nutrition, and the alcohol is what made it to where it wasn't full of bacteria.
And you didn't quite mind being a slave as much.
Hey, you know, it's time for a break. It's lunchtime. Okay, so this, what I have here, here's, you know, somebody I know has learned how to distill, you know, there's a little bit left here. We're just going to have to take, I'm, you know, and it's probably not a good idea for me to be able to, you know, you didn't see it. See how I did that? You know, this is the ability, we are making rocket stoves at aluminum cans. We put it up on the site to show you how easy it is, but you need the fuel. And that's one thing that we looked at, all the food that we make, anything you're cooking, the beans and all, like enormous amounts of fuel to be able to heat the water to do this. So then we had the sun oven, and I go, that solved a whole bunch of my problems. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Then you were able to make ethanol and little rockets, so you got fuel. Then you're making fuel with the, and tell the audience again, what are you using to make the methane to power your grill?
Well, anything that's ever lived can be a fuel source or a form of natural gas. And so food scraps, plant clippings, after you filleted the fish, the leftovers, not the bones, but the other stuff, you can put cow manure in there, whatever. You put it in. It's like a septic tank. And basically, it forms a gas, a methane gas, and that gas pressurizes up at the top. And then I bubble that through a bath of lime. Basically, it's just water with lime mixed in it. And it takes, because that raw gas is about 50% carbon dioxide. And so you take that out of that gas. Now you have about a 95% pure methane.
And it's that simple. And it's the size of half of a, like a 55-gallon drum. I mean, it's not that big.
Two 55-gallon barrels, but it's too small. Really, you need something to, like two totes. Two 300-gallon totes would be a pretty good size system.
Yeah, but I mean, for what? I mean, just for grilling, you just had, I mean, it's just to show, hey, I did my, you know, I cut the fish, I did it, I cooked it, done.
Right.
And I go, oh, that's just cool demonstration.
Proof of concept, yeah.
Now, what about the guys that were doing the biodiesel, the sorrel materials? You know, we were really trying to get them, you know, Bob's, of course, interested in this, because the only thing that he has coming in from off the grid, I mean, from on the grid, is what? Diesel fuel?
Diesel fuel.
You know, and then, you know, so that's to run your generator when you really got, it's 120 and yeah. I want to put it on the central air.
That's a creature comfort. I could get by without it, but I wouldn't like it.
You know, so if they can make algae biodiesel, you go, I vote that. You know, so how are they doing on that?
You know, we're still working on it. The problem that we've had is not the reactor. Taking algae and squeezing the oil out and refining it into diesel is very easy. That's done. It's being able to consistently grow it, and the temperature seems to be the biggest problem out here. We had a huge batch. I had a great batch of algae going, and it was like, you know, 4 inches thick, and that was in the springtime. It turned hot and all died. And so we've got to figure out, is there another strain? And there's hundreds of thousands of kinds of single-cell lipid algaes out there. And so you have to figure out for this area or where you live in the country, well, what's going to grow certain times of the year? And that may be the answer.
So it's kind of, you have 12 versions for 12 months of the 12, and we blend in and kind of just keep production and do an ad.
Yeah, I mean, we're still working on it, but it's tough. It's
but
not,
why
not
isn't
easy.
This? See, my thing is that they're going, yeah, it's just cheaper to we just, you know, if it starts getting some competition, we'll just lower the price of a barrel of oil. And if we can charge X amount for it, we will, because we can. You know, so it's all competition, you know, energy, being able to make different kind of material, whatever. It's all oil-based. And you go, you start having, even carbon nanotubes come, oh, we can make this so much better, and you never have to, well, and oil is now a third of what it was, and, you know, squish that out.
It's not just oil. It's energy. That is the key. You being able to be energy independent or self-sufficient is not something they want to be able to have happen.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. I mean, you know, it's by them being able to keep energy at just under the cost of anybody that, and because it comes out of the ground for free. I mean, I know there's a gazillions of dollars they do in exploration or whatever, but once they tap it, man, it's just gimme.
Yeah, well, that's free market and competition. As soon as somebody can do it cheaper, they got to lower their price so you can.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, I got a minute here before the break. I'm going to tell you guys a secret. Blah, 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 blah. I know someone that is a big VP of the yada, yada, that they make customized hoses for the deep well drilling industry. So if you're out in Horizon, De La, Gulf, or whatever the heck, the hoses that go at, they got to be tested up to 60,000 PSI, okay? For them to be able to, these deep wells pull up, they all of a sudden had spikes of over 100,000 pressure, and that's what was blowing out a lot of these deep things. So two things. One, they're going, you know, there's geothermal. We just make freaking in. Oh, by the way, we get some hydrocarbons, because they're finding out that it's aerobic. It's not from dying dinosaurs. It is a side effect of the crust. You know, hydrogen's the most common. What, you know, high carbon, you put it in the kind of heat and make, boom, done. All right? Here comes oil, refilling all these drained out oil deposits and so on. So they know there's plenty of oil. Then, if they can get to a certain level of the heat, and when the hydrocarbons are being made, they can just start pumping out nanotubes, graphene, all kinds of, it's made as a byproduct of the heat and the pressure at certain levels of the kind of, and here we go, and they're making the hoses to be able to do this. And they're going to, well, they're not telling us, I go, did they mention this? Did they need that? Or did I go, they're going to harvest nanotubes out of the crust. This is what's coming, and to get some heat with it and kind of what it's changing. Are you up to speed?
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
Did you know that you can listen to LRN.FM 24/7 via our free-to-air satellite channel? From Mexico to Canada, our signal covers nearly all of North America. All you need is a view of the southern sky, an affordable receiver, and a dish as small as 30 inches. There are no monthly fees. Learn more at sat.lrn.fm. Plus, if you're a broadcaster or want to be one, this is a good delivery method for our content. See our coverage map and get details at sat.lrn.fm. That's sat.lrn.fm.
It's The Onion Radio News. A man on TV urges the mass purchase of Listerine. This is Doyle Redland reporting. In what is believed to be the widest reaching appeal ever made by an individual on behalf of an oral hygiene aid, an unidentified man urged millions of people across the U.S. to purchase Listerine brand antiseptic mouthwash today. Experts are baffled as to why a person with the power to reach millions would choose to present an oral hygiene related message. FCC spokesperson Grant Yarborough.
Well, this individual should be so obsessed with oral hygiene as to demand that several million bottles of Listerine be simultaneously purchased as baffling.
The man, described as a handsome, trustworthy-looking individual in his early 30s, emphatically stressed that Listerine should be purchased over other inferior mouthwash brands. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
This is The Onion News Network.
MindThings.com is a fun online game that pits you against people around the world to mine for scarce resources. Do business in a capitalist economy with virtually mined gold, tax-free. It doesn't require a big time commitment. Your little mining robot guy works whether you're logged in or not. It costs nothing to play, but you can buy bonuses. They even accept bitcoins. Go to MindThings.com, use coupon code FTL, and double your mining speed. It's free. MindThings.com. Here's a chance to do a little activism while you're cruising Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. Between the LOL cats, the recipes, the hot girls, and the inspirational sunrise memes, Free Talk Live's post pass by your newsfeed. Like them. Comment. It gives us more exposure. If you don't see our posts, click like at facebook.freetalklive.com and then hover over it to click get notifications. It's an easy way to spread the ideas of liberty a bit further. I know you're busy, but you can spare that tenth of a calorie it takes to click on something. Facebook.freetalklive.com.
What if the key to achieving liberty in your lifetime was to move together with others who think like you? Liberty activists are joining the Free State Project, which is over 70% of the way to its goal of 20,000 participants. And they're already making the move to New Hampshire. The successes are piling up and are proving the Free State Project is a real movement and no longer just a great idea. When you're planning your move, consider Keene. Keene is famous for its civil disobedience and non-cooperation, and there's plenty of political opportunity as well. From demonstrations and vigils to outreach and volunteering, there's a lot going on in Keene. Keene is the liberty media capital of the world, with television, talk radio, and more, all originating here. Though it's more than just activism, with regular social events each week. See what's happening at freekeene.com and get connected with video, audio, free books, a forum, and activist tools you can download and use in your area at freekeene.com. That's freekeene.com.
You can interact with other LRN listeners in our message board at forum.lrn.fm. That's forum.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And we're right back. Okay. This is the one thing that, God, there's so much stuff. You know, these are the guys to talk to about this stuff and share with you guys and do and whatever. All right. There was this right here, as the story I was telling them about, you know, it's like they don't even believe me. Smell-o-vision coming to a living room near you. Now, this is a story about them having, when you go on your computer, you're watching television or whatever, there is a mechanism by which they can have you smell, you know, the scenes. You're in the battle of, you know, Braveheart, Daylight, intestines spewing all over the camera, kind of, ew, you know, and you know, different scenes from, you know, the flowers walking through and by Prozac. I mean, you know, as they're, you know, boinging around in the fields and, you know, reading off this big, giant, long list of how your, you know, your testicles going to fall off. And you go, yeah, but at least my hair grows in. So, I mean, you know, so this is the kind of, but if they can associate that with a smell, what happened at the subconscious, too? Even when you're sleeping, the one thing that your body does process smell when you're sleeping is kind of an awareness thing. So I'm going, okay. So what happens? They got associated with warm, fuzzy feeling bunnies and whatever, and a smell, and all of a sudden you're sleeping, and you know you're thinking about that, or maybe it's with fear, or maybe you're watching, you know, Hillary Clinton in a presidential campaign, and they got the right frequency in, and the smell associated with, and kind of doing. You go, ooh, she is kind of hot. Then you know something's screwed up. Okay. So these are the kind of things that are being done, and we got to be prepared for this kind of stuff. The Xbox almost came with smell-o-vision, and the only thing, we just did a story yesterday, and I was looking for it when I found this, but they almost did a story, I mean, they almost put it in there for this launch of the Xbox One. When it goes a year from now, next Christmas, you're going to start hearing about, and smell. What else? Emotion waves, you know, kind of the brain pattern, what do they got now? They got, you know, the TSA read your mind, you go through, you got ill intent and kind of wing, you know, tell and do it. What if they can manipulate certain emotions? Just a little twang. What if they are now? See, we have to use logic and reason is the only thing that's going to allow. And what's the logic? And keep breathing in and out without bothering other people. They're breathing in and out, express themselves, do what they want, kind of that Bill of Rights thing. So who's providing us an example of doing that very thing and wanting to share it? You know, put it in the market, being part of, you know, you get to breathe in and out and not bother anybody. We can all bypass the collective downfall of the whatever. Mr. Bob Anderson's been doing it for a decade. Okay. Chad has some more goodies to add to what he's doing and what we're all doing. A lot of people are starting to contact him. We need to make it mobile. Can we do that? Can we put it on low prayer? But, you know, what's going to happen? Is there any place that's really safe? And for how long? Do you need to be the cockroach in the cracks of the whatever, you know, and just wait for, you know, everybody to turn into Soylent Green and you go get yours later? I mean, you know, what are you going to do? A friend of mine in the 90s, we just started to learn about guns. You know, we were kind of, okay, you know, I guess we got to buy a gun. Okay, what's this mean? Where's the hell the freaking safety? You know, you see in the action movies and they just, you know, kick a piece of wood and it pops up and they grab it and they go, and I go, yeah, where's the safety? I had no freaking idea. So we started, you know, learning ourselves. We kind of, okay, we're learning it. We're getting taught and have some friends show us. But is that really what we need to know? What do we need to know? How to keep breathing in and out in a peaceful society and do that. Okay. Then what? Well, that's what this Freedom Summit's about. What happens after? And during this transition, we need to just, and it's all depending on each other and ourselves, won't you be my neighbor? Puerto Rico. Hey, man, Chad, I like your endlessfoodsystems.com thing. Man, send me down, we'll distribute, and we do, oh, and this is how it starts. Is there somebody to stop it? Is there going to, I want to cover it. I want to make sure. I want to walk these through. We got kids from India coming out. The smell-o-vision came, yeah, it's like 4 or 5 years ago. There was a kid in India that realized that if you had 5 base chemicals that you had in different combinations, create almost any smell. Just like combinations of a few colors on your television will make a full color, whatever, and you see it. Okay? So I'm going, this is coming. So what's the preparation? Bob, give us a, how vulnerable are we on power?
Well, I would think that, you know, we talked about that documentary or docudrama, whatever you want to call it, was, you know, we're actually pretty vulnerable. I mean, we have allowed, there's a lot of money that's invested in the major power grid. We really not have distributed power. A lot of the investment that's in it, particularly in the Northeast in that area, I mean, they've had some big blackouts. And, you know, we have gone out and pissed off some other countries with showing how well we could computer virus them. You don't think these people aren't going to try to do it back to us. Talk a little bit about EMPs and stuff. I mean, it's real enough that the government's actually starting to do some studies and spend some real cash on it because they believe it's a, you know, a viable threat just from the sun. You know, I mean, they've shown in the past, we think in,
you know, 100 years ago,
we think in 10 year spans, like that's ancient history. You know, the sun thinks in thousands or millennium cycles, and, you know, they've had it in just in recent history, 100 years ago or 150 years ago. Solar pulses that were enough that they go, good thing we weren't electrified back then, because, you know, they had like telegraph wires that were like catching fire and things like that, just from the basic telegraph they had going across the United States. If we had a major just sun generated EMP, it could cause some very serious problems with
that's
the
big
grid.
Concern of a lot of people. That's one thing.
It's
about
probably the most realistic threat we have.
Probably the more reason to be more, you know, distributed, you know, making your own and doing the simple kind of, you know, just a solar rollout panel stuff that I got. And that's one thing, Chad, that we were working on. You'll see out leaning up against a big pond out there, a large 6-inch, you know, tube that we have there. And I'll tell you what we're going to do with that. They, Mike Crosswhite and Brian Gallagher, some, you know, innovative inventor kind of guys we're doing some stuff with, energy things, they came up with the idea of using the aerator that we use for the tank there, you know, keep it aerated, is it creates a bubble at the bottom and it lifts the water with the bubble. We're using a sump pump to lift the water, but they're doing it with air bubbles. What happened, it's like 20% of the energy. So now, all of a sudden, in addition to just doing the HOPE system, getting off grid, I don't need 300 watts to run it and power it and kind of doing this for the, yeah, now I need like a third of the power to do the same thing. So this kind of innovation is what we're kind of playing with and innovate, and, you know, you want to share with everyone, because this information shared, and I don't mind you making money on it, be my freaking guest, but this information shared and made available could very well save humanity. In fact, aquaponics is way more prevalent around the world than we realized. We learned about it from somebody doing it in Ecuador or something. That's how we first heard about it. So I am, give us an idea of how much can you feed your family when it gets down to bam and you start doing your backyard? Can your family survive on this?
Yes, absolutely. You would have to, you know, you'd want to manage it really well. I don't manage my system as well as I should, but if we were in a situation where we truly were relying on it, then yeah, I'd be out there every day looking for any kind of bug I could find, you know, to make sure it was in good shape. But yeah, I would say that a space 12 feet wide by 20 feet long, a family of, say, three people, possibly four people, could survive off of that. And I do mean survive. I don't mean, you know, they're going to get fat off of it. But they could grow enough to, you know, to sustain life.
Well, it's even better than that, because a lot of times, you know, the big claim is we're eating way too many calories to begin with. You want to extend your life, you start eating a lot more vegetables and fewer calories, and you get your fish, and you know, you're going to be a lot better off anyway, you know, and I'd be more party. But the so this is, I'm hoping that people will see the future is going to be totally different than what it is now. But to what? I mean, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, this, are we going to sustain America? You know, is this going to be the way it's going to America? You know, as we're going to be bombing everybody and doing America? You know, I mean, you know, this is, I don't see it sustainable in this way. I see countries and people and individuals and families coming together. You know, I see, you know, just a generation of, you know, hey, I don't hate you, you don't hate me, and our governments suck, you know, but, and we're just going to innovate our way out of it. But that's a threat to people. When we come back in the next segment, what I want to do is that will, what we'll end on. You know, we'll give, you know, Chad opportunity to express himself on what he and his family are trying to be an example for. And it's just, it really is an inspiration. And as much as we enjoy him helping us, doing whatever, we're wanting to do everything we can to help him. Because why? One last thing we got to do. You know, I want to not die. I think everybody, you know, it's all about my dog. Because if you don't know how to feed yourself, you're going to come get my dog.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yes, more fashion, rock and roll, and whatnot. You know, that's one thing that I saw in the movie, the series Revolution that we were talking about off air. I've been watching that. I'm kind of almost through the first season. And there was one thing, no power, blah, blah, blah. It comes down to what they made, a bunch of virus-sized nanites that, you know, absorbed power and replicated, and the whole planet doesn't make electricity. So now they got to turn it on and command to, you know, stop sucking power, you know, whatever. But but that's how, you know, I'm going, okay, I'll watch a few, half the season, find out, seriously, how does electrons stop? I want to know how they, that, you know, some BS right there. So they came up with some fairy tale, whatever. But the thing is that, you know, they have no power, so they weren't able to play any music. And they finally got, you know, an amplifier and a power, and a scientist made, and they're kind of doing whatever. And what are they listening to? Lionel Richie, man. They just like, it's by, oh, music, yes. 15 years it had been off. This series starts 15 years, and they do some flashback kind of stuff. But how society has devolved into, you know, whatever. And a lot of it, it's very interesting to do. And then the series Jericho. I really suggest you watch the series Jericho. And it went the same way of Firefly. You know, they go, yeah, you know, they're thinking a little too much about, damn, we don't want people knowing and contemplating and the government being, nope, canceled. And it's always, and in every one of these series, the free places to go, we got to get to Texas. It's always Texas. And the reason is, I've lived in Texas, and I'm telling you, Texas has a whole different mindset. They're their own freaking country. It's a republic of. You're lucky we allow the United States to be part of us. I mean, you know, it's a different kind of attitude. So a lot of this stuff that we're doing and everything, you know, where's the interest come from? Texas. They're going, hey, we got plenty. Let's see. Let's see if we got enough land. Yeah, we do. Okay? And we got oil. And we got, and we got the people, and we got the land, and we're good. So I'm going, all right. So this is, you know, as we evolve and preparing ourselves for whatever may come, it's going to be any one of the things that we're talking about here. It could be pissed off country that we pissed off that's got some computer aided individuals that are motivated to go and we don't have power anymore. It could be the sun doing something. It could be, you know, a war, a plague, a fall of government, the collapse of the petrodollar, you know, something. So there's going to be days, if not weeks, if not years, that we're going to be able to build a society. Freedom's phoenix from the ashes of whatever it was. Lady Liberty's torch kind of winks out, and all of a sudden, freedom's phoenix, boom. That's what this entire effort, all our activism, Bob and I have been doing this since we were young activists, doing creating freedom's phoenix. The whole concept was the after, because we are at or nearing peak tyranny. Sooner or later, it falls off, and we're going to go with something else. Voluntarist. Ron Paul kind of showed the way in this next generation. Here they come. But they don't know how to use a screwdriver. They have no idea. Diode? What the hell is that? You know, how does your cell phone work? Like this? See, I pushed a button. I'm going, no. How does it work? Well, I don't know. I pushed a button. It has an on thing on it. And I'm going, yeah, seriously, we're in trouble. So Chad's helping us prepare. What's the one thing that you would like to share with the audience that, you know, maybe they didn't get in the doomsday prepper thing, that one thing that you're going, look, man, everybody should know and prep themselves and raise their children, you know, your message now, go.
Oh, absolutely. It's to learn how to grow your own food. It's to become aware of how, you know, dependent we've become on other people for our survival. And I just think that you're a lot better off if you know how to grow your own food, if you know, have some ideas of how you can survive without power. You know, why not? And then involve your kids with it. You know, get the kids away from the computer and off of their phones and get them out there in the garden with you. Get out there. And my daughter, she is so fired up about getting goats. And she's been pressing me for 6 months to get goats. And so I said, I tell you what, you go out there and I'll show you how to dig the holes. You dig the holes, build the fence, build the barn, and I'll let you get some goats. Well, for about two or three months now, she gets home from school. She goes out there. She'll dig about one hole because that's about all she has the energy to be able to do. But it's stuff like that. You know, we've got to get back to reality. You know, the TV is not reality.
I have a lot of respect for goats, but we sold our goats because they just freaking eat everything except grass. I mean, you know, which is what I got them for. But the I really had a lot of respect for them. I liked them. I really enjoyed them. They were nice animals. They were, you know, not offensive. They had a lot of talent in it. But, I mean, don't let them near a tree, man. The bark is theirs, you know. I still got a thing for them because they, ooh, messing up one of my trees. But the chickens, turkeys, we kind of, you know, a lot of this, I'm building up to, I got to do the turkey harvesting thing. And I'm like, all right, fine, you know, because Bob was here when Donna did it. Remember what she said? She says, I need to know you can put food on this family, you know. So I'm like, ooh, it's a manhood thing. Turkey, you'd be dead, man. You're done. You know, is there something you wanted to share, Bob, before we finish up?
No, you know, I just like coming by and, like, say, have a couple hours, usually on Friday when I'm in town. And, you know, I always know it's going to be an interesting time over here.
Well, so. When you got to leave?
Oh, this afternoon sometime. I go pick my boys back up.
Fine. And you can help me get that sink installed because it's all ready.
Yeah, well, I helped you cut the wood last time we were over here.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it only took me a month. Anyway, so, it's one thing after another. Like, I'm ready now. It's raining. I mean, I have so limited time, so I do a little bit at a time. But it came out pretty nice, didn't it?
Yeah, it looks good.
Real nice.
It looks very nice. See, the homie's got some skills. So this is, I also have a swing. It's kind of like the cover that we did for the kitchen one. If those of you that get subscribed to the magazine, that cover is kind of the setup the way I'm going to do this dome. And I came up with this great idea, is if you have a single, like a kidney-shaped kind of countertop, like an island, but it has one leg on it that's very sturdy, and I'm looking for the swing so I can move it around. You know, I can do different things with it. And I'm sitting here, I'm talking to my sons and one of their friends, Kyle, you know, is over there, all engineers and stuff. And I go, I need something that'll swivel. And he's sitting on a chair, and he goes, mean like this? And I go, damn it, man, I hate you guys, you know? That's a mechanism I need, is a swivel chair thing. I'm going to go harvest one of these chairs out here. Boom, I'm done. And I'm sitting there looking for something like that. He goes, yeah, and they sell them their boat chairs, you know, for when you're bass boats, you can get them there. You can get them. I'm going, okay, I get it. Oh, and there's another, okay, I get it, okay. Damn, you know, so I'm thinking I'm going to have to make something, you know, and that come up with that. So I'm going, all right. So that is a demonstration of a lot of what you're doing, you know, and the Hope system, I think, is very cool. I think that, you know, what you're doing with the aquaponics out there and creating, because there's a lot of aquaponics. I mean, there's a lot, you know, Bob and I came up with the verticals. We went online, found all that kind of stuff. But what you have is a system. It is for dumbasses like me to be able to just order your thing, and I'm willing, you know, somebody in Puerto Rico is willing to pay a couple $1,000 in freaking shipping so that they can have it, so that they can start replicating, doing, and learning, and go. And that, how long did it take you before you really got to where you're comfortable with how you're going to create the system? Because you started without a system.
Oh, yeah. It took right out a year. It really took a year to get it developed, and I did not think it would take that long. I really honestly thought I could do it in about a month or two. But it took a full year to get it to a place to where, okay, I'm comfortable shipping this. I'm comfortable they could put this thing together. It's going to work and all that. And we've just finished developing, too, a little tabletop system. You can go to our website, endlessfoodsystems.com, and see that on there. We just did a kick, like a Indiegogo Kickstarter type campaign on it. It's I think it ended yesterday, and so we'll start taking orders on our website now for that.
Well, how much did you raise?
I think we raised about $7,000 or $8,000 on there.
Ah, we can do it again on Freedom's Phoenix Funding Center. You know, we're gonna see. This is why I wanted to have this for a guy, and I'm gonna use like the young man from India. I go, I don't give a crap. He goes, well, what would you use it for? It's a paperweight. What do I care? You know, I want the freaking nice, cool little perfume bottle I got, Carbon Nano Bite Me. You know, I put it right there. I do it. That's how we want to help us do it. And I'll put a little Freedom's Phoenix logo on it or something. I mean, you know, we'll 3D print the whatever the hell. You know, I mean, come on, let's go. It's rock and roll. Because I'm tired of waiting on they, them, those. It is not in they, them, those's interest for us to live a more self-sustaining, healthier, productive, resilient lifestyle. It is not. They want us dependent. They want us uninformed. They want us uneducated. They need us that way to justify their existence. So do I go after them? You know, Bob and I are done with, I don't know what, everything. You know, voting, protest, process.
Yeah, concentrate on breathing in, breathing out, and getting through what's coming.
I vote that. So we're going to, there's all this stuff that we're doing. We're going to go out and work some more on the dome. The man dome. And it's going to have LED lighting and the plumbing and the water and the flowing and the cleaning and the cameras and the sound. And that. And I get done as soon as I can. Took him a year. I'll get done before that. So it's made because your system, it'd be nice to have like a dome thing. You know, put the plans in here, make your own dome.
Sure.
Here, we'll ship the dome. You know, it fits. You know, so that's one thing. It's just that using the conduit's heavy. Man, those damn things, man. You think you got shipping costs now. I mean, you know, but there's other materials. It might be made out of
carbon fiber
nanotube. You see? Future. It's going to be very bright, and we're all going to need to wear shades.